All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Jim Pier 138 podcast. And I swear to God, guys, if it's not one thing, it's another. So apparently, the Glimmervale audiobook is going to be delayed just a little bit. For some reason, Reaper, the program that I use on my computer to edit the audio and everything, it was not exporting at the proper bit rate for ACX and Audible. So I have to go in and I have to re-export all of these fucking files and send them all back over to Michael. But hopefully it'll be up in about a week or so, because they have to check through the files. Once you upload them to the website, they have to check through the files. So hopefully the Glimmervale audiobook will be up soon. I just need to take care of that shit. I feel a little bad because the guy already sent the final payment and the files weren't right for ACX. I thought I had my shit set where it would upload just fine to ACX, but no, apparently I fucked it up. But it's a pretty easy fix. It's just time intensive. You have to sit there and load it all in and then adjust the bitrate and then, you know, export everything. And it's going to take, like, I don't even fucking know how long. But anyway, apart from that, I've got a new story up on Steemit. It's called Rats in the Sewers. I'll put a link down in the description in case y'all want to go read that. It should all be up by the time this podcast goes out. So if you guys want to go check out my new story, it is over there on Steemit. And I hope that you guys enjoy it. And if you guys would give me some feedback on my writing, I would be most appreciative. Bear in mind, this story was written for the 21st Century Thrilling Adventure Anthology that Misha Burnett was putting out, like, last year, I think. And it was meant to be all of a piece. So I had to go into it with an axe and find out where's a good, like, four places here. Okay, we got the start, part two, part three, part four. Where can I just, like, take an axe to this thing and cut it in fucking in pieces so that I can put it up on Steemit properly? But I think I did a pretty good job of finding some nice little suspenseful places to cut it up, you know, right before the action kicks in and shit. But let me know what you guys think. I would really appreciate that. I think it's a good story, but it's a little bit, the dialogue is a little bit Maiden Butler, and it really can't be helped because this is a series of stories that I had written years ago in college, back when I was still into, like, nihilistic fiction, and I hadn't read, like, what do you call it, Harry Dresden. I hadn't read any Jim Butcher yet. I hadn't even gotten into the pulps yet back when I wrote these stories. So, I lost all my manuscripts for those stories, because I used to write longhand. I've got like half of a manuscript lying around here somewhere for one of the stories, so I just decided to throw all that shit out and start over. And I've got all of these conceptions for the world, but I don't want to do it in, like, a consecutive storyline anymore. So I'm just gonna write stories for these guys and publish them whenever the fuck I'm able to get the stories. I've got like fucking 8 different storyline continuities that I'm working on. And I'm trying to learn how to write one-shots as well. I've got a mech story coming up that is meant to be a one-shot. It's just like, boom, here's the thing, story's over at the end of it. And I've also got one more hunter story that I want to upload. So next is going to be the hunter thing while I'm editing the mech story. And then I've got another one waiting in the wings that I was going to give to James from the D&D group. Because he's thinking about starting up, like, a little digest magazine, kind of like Kirsova. And I'm like, well, shit, I've got this story here. Let me know what you think. But I haven't heard from him in, like, a good month now. A little bit over a month, like a month and a week. He just dropped off the fucking face of the earth. He hasn't been showing up at D&D. I haven't seen him on Twitter. I have no idea what the fuck he's doing. So we'll see how that goes. I would like to get in touch with him before I just go ahead and publish that story, because I promise that, you know, if he's doing his thing, I would save it for his magazine. But if he's not doing that anymore, then, or if he just, like, fell off the face of the earth, he got left behind in one of the realities when I get blackout drunk and just, like, shift one reality over. So now everybody cares what Kanye has to say about politics. It's weird. But that one might be coming out depending on how soon I hear back from James. I don't know. I hope the guy gets in touch with me soon, because I like talking to the motherfucker. He's a lot of fucking fun. I just haven't heard from his ass in forever, so we'll see. But anyway, just to get into the absolute fucking state of the United Kingdom, I thought this was pretty fucking funny. This is really short, so this is from how the fuck do you even pronounce that? Dunfermline Press, and West of Fife Advertiser. I've literally never heard of this website before. But apparently a man is in court for having a potato peeler in a public place. Now, UK, come on, y'all. Come on. Y'all ain't right, man. A man ended up behind bars after being found in a Dunfermline street with an offensive weapon. A potato peeler. Because, you know, the potato peeler is truly the most dangerous of improvised weapons. Not the kitchen knife, not the gardening shears, not battery acid. The fucking potato peeler. That's what you gotta watch out for. Now y'all know, if you ever see somebody coming at you with a potato peeler, just run. Just shit your pants, run away, and call the cops, because they've got malicious intent. They're gonna peel your potatoes. So, Scott Walker, 39, of the James Bank Hostel, James Street, appeared from custody at the Dunfermline Sheriff Court. I'm still having trouble pronouncing that. He admitted that on Saturday in Appin Crescent, a public place, he was in possession of an object that which had a blade. Y'all are supposed to be British. Y'all invented this language. How do I speak it better than you? It's called proof reading, fam. And it's ridiculous. Like, I do a lot of articles on this podcast, because part of it is just talking about, I'm a politically minded guy, so I like getting into the news. There are just a ridiculous amount of fucking typos in news articles. Journalists, y'all need to shape your shit up. Get a proofreader. They can't be that fucking expensive. You just need somebody to go over the thing with a red pen. I'll do it for like $20 an article. $20 an article, I'll proofread your shit for you. Okay? Had a blade or was sharply pointed, namely a potato peeler. Defense solicitor Selena McKay said her client suffers from significant learning difficulties, which have been lifelong. They arrested an autistic guy for having a potato peeler. What if he was just going to his job? What if he was just going to his job to peel him some potatoes, make some French fries? Oh my god. Sheriff Pino Di Amedio called for reports, and Walker will return to court on May 16th for sentencing. They're going to sentence this guy. Oh my god. Britain, sort your shit out. Like, London recently surpassed New York City in levels of violence. Okay? New York City is, like, not a nice town. I've been to New York City, okay? I stayed for, like, overnight. I stayed overnight. We showed up because my girlfriend at the time had bought tickets, or gotten a hold of tickets somehow, to go and see Rush. And she brought me along because she knew that I love Rush. We're not together anymore. New York City is the most unpleasant place I have ever been in my life. And I've been to Richmond, Virginia, where I used to do maintenance on self-storage places. So, you know, when you're driving down the highway and you see one of those long buildings with the rack of roll-up doors, they look like garage doors, and it's like, you know, X's self-storage or something like that. I used to work for a freelance company, independent contractors, that would go around and service these places. So we would change door springs, we would change doors, we would do concrete work, we would install cameras, you know, security cameras and stuff like that. We would paint, just gutters, clean gutters, do landscaping, all of that stuff. So I would travel around a lot. And the farthest north I ever went with that company was Richmond, Virginia. And Richmond, Virginia is a hellhole. Like, it was in the city. The self-storage place was in the city. And they had to have, like, a buzzer on the door because crime was so bad in Richmond. They had to have a buzzer on the door so you would come up and you would, like, hit the intercom and let them know what you were there for. And then the lady behind the counter would buzz you in and unlock the door from, you know, behind the desk. And if the crime in Richmond is that bad, I can only fucking imagine what it's like in New York City, because everybody that I met in New York City was just rude as fuck. Well, okay, that's not entirely true. There were a few nice people. Most people just minded their own business, you know what I mean? You know, I would step outside the hotel to have a smoke or something like that, and people just left me alone. I got the kind of people watch. New York City is an interesting place, but it's not a place that I would ever want to live, because we went walking around to the, what's that stupid fucking consignment shop that has a show on the History Channel, the Oddities and weird thing, like the shop in New York City that sells like shrunken heads and shit like that. We went down to that place, and I didn't go in because it was crowded as fuck. It's like, the entire shop was like the size of my room. My room's like, I don't know, 12 by 10, something like that. The entire shop was about the size of my room. Really, it could have fit in an alleyway. So I didn't go in, but I got to watch New York City and experience like the traffic and shit like that. New York City is a fucking hellhole. If your violent crime is worse than New York City, y'all got shit to sort out that is a lot bigger than some autistic nigga with a potato peeler in a public place. Let me see if I can find something about that, because that's just an interesting thing for like the absolute state of fucking London and the UK. We'll just go with the first one. Now, I know this is CBS News. I'll put a archive down in the description. I'm going to use the actual website because I use Brave and it does ad blocking and all of that stuff. So yeah, this is from CBS News, April 3rd, it's not giving me a name for the person behind the article, and it's kind of short. So I guess it's just, contributor, staff, somebody like that. But London's murder rate surpasses New York's for the first time ever. A surge of stabbings in London was blamed Monday for the city overtaking New York's monthly murder tally for the first time in modern history. 15 people were murdered in London during February compared to 14 in New York, according to police figures. So they got us by one. They got us by one, but this isn't really a contest that you want to win. But you win this contest by not having as many murders. So, London needs to sort their shit out before they start worrying about the autistic guy with the potato peeler. The British capital also suffered 22 fatal stabbings and shootings in shootings in London? Oh, no, that's not possible. They banned guns. I'm told that they banned guns in the UK, in Britain, and that solved the shooting problem over there. That solved the gun violence problem. They banned guns, and that got rid of the gun violence. So this must be wrong. They must have not fact-checked properly. Higher than the 21 in New York. Y'all are fucking neck and neck. It's just like one hellhole trying to outstrip another in how many people fucking die in a month in it. Or are murdered in a month. Because you can just die and, you know, there's no foul play, but murder is a whole other game. There have been 10 fatal stabbings in London in the last 19 days. This was published on April 3rd. Really? April 3rd? It's May. So yeah, this was a month ago. Following on from the 80 fatal stabbings recorded in the city last year. Jesus Christ, London. London's murder rate has grown by nearly 40% in 3 years, while police figures show that New York's has fallen by 87% since 1990, raising pressure on London Mayor Sadiq Khan and Metropolitan Police Commissioner Cressida Dick. I'm not touching that. It's too easy. Now, I don't consider myself a comedian. I like to think that I can be reasonably funny when I put my mind to it, but that's low-hanging fruit that I'm not even going to touch right there. As CBS partner network BBC News, they're partnered with the BBC? That's fucking weird, okay. London saw its first homicide of April on Monday night when a 17-year-old girl was fatally shot near her home in Tottenham, North London, for no reason at all, according to a friend who arrived on the scene quickly. The same evening, a 15-year-old boy was stabbed in another part of North London, leaving him with life-changing injuries, according to the Metropolitan Police. Jesus Christ. The absolute fucking state of the United Kingdom, fam. Y'all are supposed to be better than us. This is another one of the things. I don't ever want to hear a fucking Brit Bong talk any kind of shit about how much better the United Kingdom is than America. I don't ever want to fucking hear it again. Y'all's biggest city has now outstripped New York City in murder. Y'all still have shootings, so banning guns didn't stop the fucking gun violence problem. Y'all are arresting niggas for Facebook posts and videos on YouTube and having potato peelers. You've got your fucking police confiscating gardening equipment because they're fatal weapons. And on top of that, you're killing children and forcing their parents to watch. Now, whatever you think about the Alfie Evans case, okay, whatever you think about that and Charlie Gard, one thing that cannot be denied is that the UK government said, no, this child has to die, and the parents have to watch it happen, and they're not allowed to do anything about it. And on the flip side of that, I heard about another story where some parents had this kid. He had like terminal brain cancer or something like that. So they went to the Czech Republic, I want to say. It's not Czechoslovakia anymore. Sorry, I grew up with Czechoslovakia. You know, it's kind of stuck in here. And we got the Czech Republic and we got Slovakia now. You got to get used to this shit. But they went to like the Czech Republic or Hungary or something like that. And they kidnapped the kid out of the hospital and ran off with him and administered this experimental cancer treatment. And the kid lived. The kid's fine. He got like 30 of these treatments and now his cancers or whatever he had is in remission and he's fine. He's able to go home with his family. So it just makes me wonder what could have happened with like Charlie Gard or Alfie Evans if the government had allowed them to go to America in the case of Charlie Gard and Italy in the case of Alfie Evans. Now, with Alfie Evans, it probably would not have mattered all that much because kid's dead now. Rest in peace. You know, my condolences to the family. But the kid had a degenerative brain condition that was messing with the white matter in his brain. And apparently his brain at the time of death was mostly just like cerebrospinal fluid. There wasn't really anything there to save. But it's not the place of the state to say that you're not allowed to take your kid to another country for treatment. You know, especially when they were willing to pay for it themselves. Like, the Vatican had interceded on the kid's behalf. Italy had given the kid citizenship, and they had a medical helicopter on standby waiting to take the kid to Italy for treatment. And the UK government said, no, the kid's going to die. We have decided that it is best for everybody if the child dies. Even if there was no hope, they should have been allowed to try. So the UK government may not have, you know, killed this kid outright. They may not have, you know, because the kid was probably going to die anyway. Probably. Like, we're talking like a 90% chance that the kid was going to die. But, you know, they took the kid off life support and he lived on his own for like 4 fucking days while his parents just sat there in agony and police stood outside of the hospital wasting taxpayer money to keep them from taking the kid out of the hospital. So the UK government forced this child to die while his parents watched. You know, they may not have actually killed the kid because the kid was probably going to die anyway, but you know, what they did is like an unconscionable act of evil. Undeniable evil. So yeah, I don't want to hear shit from any British people anymore ever again until y'all get this shit solved. Y'all get all this shit solved, and then we'll talk about how much better the UK is than America. But for right now, y'all don't get to talk shit no more. Your shit-talking license has been revoked completely, 100%, until y'all fix this shit. If it was me, now I've said before on the podcast, I think that the UK citizens should just rise up, overthrow your government, slaughter your political class, and start the fuck over. It's doable. You can do it. I promise. I promise you can. We did it to you, after all. And y'all were way more powerful back then than you are right now. Just saying. Y'all owned like a quarter of the entire planet when we kicked you out of our country. So it's doable. It's doable. I guarantee you they have caches of weapons that you could break into and use those to fight back. Come on, guys. UK, you need to find your sack again. And you reach down between your legs and grab your testicles and remind yourselves that y'all are men and you can't let your government run over you like this. It's just, it's shameful. It's fucking shameful, the state of the UK right now. So, there is no single cause, but there has been a big spike in both gun crime and knife crime across London. Parliamentarian David Lammy, who represents Tottenham, told the BBC, "Certainly my constituency finds itself at the epicenter of that. There are real issues about a lack of resources." I thought, the gun thing, he must be mistaken. I've been told that, you know, they got rid of the guns. They got rid of the guns. There's no guns in London. The right-wing Daily Express tabloid on Monday, CBS talking about other, you know, slow your roll, talking about other publications being tabloids. Y'all need to slow down. Just no. Y'all ain't got no right to be calling nobody else a tabloid, I swear to God. But the Daily Express ran with a headline on Monday urging Sadiq act now. Sean Yates, Scotland Yard's head of knife crime. Y'all got a head of knife crime in Scotland Yard? Holy shit, UK. Holy shit. Said part of the rise could be blamed on courts not enforcing the two strikes law aimed at jailing those caught with a knife twice. I could say something about that, but I'm not gonna. I'm just gonna leave that one right there. Police Commissioner Dick. Take a shot for every joke that I skip in this podcast. Police Commissioner Dick meanwhile blamed social media for the soaring rate with 31 fatal stabbings so far this year. Yes, it is. It is social media's fault. It's not the fact that y'all have imported, you know, God only knows how many fucking people that actively do not respect your laws and your way of life. It couldn't have anything to do with that. No. It's social media. It's Facebook. It's Twitter. It's Gab. It's Minds. It's Snapchat. It's YouTube. It's social media that's doing this. Jesus Christ. There's definitely something about the impact of social media in terms of people being able to go from slightly angry with each other to fight very quickly, she told The Times on Saturday. Hey, look, man. I've been on the internet a long time, all right? Like, I remember when LimeWire was a thing, okay? It might still be a thing for all I know, but nobody uses it anymore. But I remember when LimeWire was a thing. You know, I've been here a while. And I've gotten into a lot of arguments where I was slightly angry or even, you know, outright mad. And the other person was one of the two as well. And there were threats going back and forth. I've been threatened on, like, I was a kid, man. You know, I was a kid on some stupid Satanist forum way back in the day. I was trying to learn about Satanism because I was in a weird crisis of faith, and I wanted to know more about this thing that everyone was talking about. So I went on a forum, and I downloaded a couple of the books that they were giving away for free, and I read them, and I started talking with people, and I started up a thread. Like, why are they picking on Jesus, I think, was what it was. And this guy just got unreasonably fucking angry with me about it. But yeah, he threatened to come down to my house and, like, kick my ass or something like that. Nothing ever happened. I knew the guy wasn't gonna do shit, and he knew he wasn't gonna do shit. He was just trying to bully me off the forum, which, you know, eventually happened, not, you know, from him specifically, but wow, I just realized that I've been arguing on the internet for a long fucking time. This is not a new development. Okay, anyway, yeah, like, none of this shit ever, nobody takes this shit seriously. Like, yeah, you get some dumb motherfuckers who get in a fight on social media and then it becomes, like, some on some real shit. Like, that stupid shit that's happening with Kanye right now and that, Dillinger, Daz Dillinger, whatever the fuck it is. The guy from Snoop Dogg's clique who put out a Crip Watch on Kanye, a nationwide Crip Watch saying that, you know, Crips should kill Kanye and shit. Very rarely you get into some dumb nigga shit like that. But social media is not to blame for this rise in violent crime that y'all have going on. I will guarantee it. It may be a factor, but it's not a big factor. I'll guarantee that it's not that big of a factor. Lammy and other opposition politicians say drastic cuts to the number of police officers on the beat and the closure of community resources like youth centers have contributed to the rise in violent crime. I mean, yeah, that probably has way more to do with it than fucking Twitter. How are you going to blame social media for shit like that when you're cutting, like, your numbers of police on the beat and, you know, you're closing community centers so that these youth have nothing to do? You know, they don't have anywhere to go to have fun, so they just get into shit. I know what it's like to be a kid, man. You just go, you'd run around and get into shit. Youth centers give these kids a place to go to not get into shit. Sarah Jones, who chairs a parliamentary working group on knife crime, told the BBC earlier this week that London could learn lessons from New York. Oh my god. When you're taking lessons on crime prevention from New York City, you are fucked. You are fucked. Oh my god. There's a reason that fucking Taxi Driver was set in New York City, okay? I'm just saying. And that movie was made in, like, the late 70s. There's a reason. I fucking hate you. I swear to God. New York has been able to bring down serious violence through a public health approach, she told the BBC. We need a proper strategy that looks at all of the issues. Knife crime and violent crime acts like an epidemic, so you need to go in at the source to cut it off, and then you need to inoculate the future young people against it. That's not a bad approach. There are worse ways that you could try and take care of it, but you guys already seem to have that fucking covered. Turn in your knives. The source is the weapons, not the people that are doing shit. Like, these dumb niggas won't go out and find, like, rocks and beat each other to death with bricks and shit like that. I saw fucking Green Street Hooligans. I know how it do. Which, by the way, if you never saw Green Street Hooligans, that's the movie that proved to me that, what's his fucking name? Elijah Wood could actually act. Green Street Hooligans is a really fucking good movie. It's about Elijah Wood. He's in, like, Harvard or Yale or something over here in the States, and he gets in trouble because his roommate is, like, this a politician's son, and he gets caught with coke, and it gets blamed on Elijah Wood. So he goes over to London to live with his sister and her husband, and he meets her husband's brother, her husband's little brother, and the guy gets Elijah Wood involved in the soccer gangs that are running around just beating the shit out of each other. It's like Fight Club minus all of the pretentious bullshit. It's a really fucking good movie. But yeah, I saw that fucking movie. I know how I do in London. These niggas get into fights. You ain't gonna stop that shit by just getting rid of their weapons. These dudes, like, bring chains and I don't know if y'all can get a hold of brass knuckles in the UK, but they got all kinds of shit over there that they just fuck your ass up with. They don't need knives. Going in at source means major intervention work with youth workers. Inoculating means going into schools, changing the social norms, educating kids, teaching them what it is to be a man, teaching them how they don't need to carry knives. Well, I mean, if the crime rate is so bad, I would advise people to carry knives because you might get attacked and you need to be able to defend yourself. You know, an armed populace is a polite populace. I'm just saying, look at Vermont. Everybody got a gun in Vermont. They have hardly any fucking gun crime. Now, you can't really compare Vermont fairly to places like London or, I don't know, San Francisco or something like that, because the demographics are so different in those cities, and the population is smaller. It's more rural in Vermont. I'm sorry, Vermont's not a city, it's a state. But, you know, like California or New York State and then Vermont, and, you know, you look at the difference in crime rates, and it's kind of ridiculous, but you got to think that, you know, having everybody be armed with, like, open carry and shit like that is a little bit of a contributing factor. Just a hair. Just a nose hair. Teaching them what it is to be a man. I am dead ass certain that you have no idea what it means to be a man. But that is the fucking article right there. Let me just go ahead and archive this shit. One of the reasons that I wanted to get into the UK here and their weapons is because in America, the Democrats are not being shy anymore. They're actively telling you, like, whenever you hear somebody, "We're not coming for your guns, we just want gun control, we just want reasonable gun control, nobody's coming for your guns," they are lying, okay? They are fucking lying. And if you want a situation like what's happening in the UK, like what's happening in Germany, like what's happening in France right now, disarm the populace. There you go. You'll have the groundwork laid. That's how you fucking do it. And that's what these people are trying to do. They're trying to disarm the populace so that they can kill you whenever they feel like it. That's what it's about. That's literally the end game. So whenever somebody says, like, I got into this conversation on Tumblr with this person that's like, "Oh, that we just want gun control. Gun control doesn't mean a gun ban." And I'm sitting here like, nobody fucking believes in your lies, okay? We've seen the guy who's trying to be a sheriff in Florida. I don't remember what the specific town in Florida it is, but he's trying to be sheriff of this town. And he openly admitted that, yeah, we want a gun ban, and we will come and kill you if you don't surrender your firearms. We know what the fuck the game is. Come and take them, motherfucker. That's it. Baseline. We're done being nice anymore. Come and fucking take them. If you kill us before we kill you, you win. There you go. How far are you willing to take this? How many lives are you willing to sacrifice to get your fucking gun ban? Because that's what it's going to take. We're done playing with you fucking people anymore. So, I saw this on Hard Bastard's stream. Hat tip to Hard Bastard. Go and look up the Hard News Network. He's on YouTube and Gab and Twitter. Usually it's at Hard Bastard, and there's also the Hard News Network. He basically does news aggregation and commentary. Really, really good. I catch his show just about every day when I can, because I like to stay up on the news, and he does a lot of legwork bringing all of these articles together for his live streams. So I highly recommend Hard Bastard. Really chill guy. Good taste in movies, good taste in music. And he's pretty fucking sensible. He's not like, a horrendous right-wing conservative. It's not like we're talking about Alex Jones. This very reasonable dude, and he does very good news coverage, and he comments on videos from certain shows like AM Joy and, you know, The Young Turks, The David Pakman Show, Ring of Fire, which the disrespect in choosing that name. Fuck Farron Cousins. Anyway, so this is a perfect example, and there will be an archive of this down in the description, so this is from... who is Eric Swalwell, who, to my knowledge, is a, well, let me actually just go ahead and look up who Eric Swalwell is. He's an American politician from California who serves as the representative from California's 15th Congressional District and is a member of the Democrat Party. Okay, well, it looks like that has archived. I don't want to save the page again. This is fine. So I'm going to get rid of that. Okay, so now we know who Eric Swalwell is. Let's get into his little... op-ed in USA Today, and yes, I am using an archive for this, because fuck USA Today, and fuck this nigga in particular. California. California truly is the asshole of the United States. So, the title of this op-ed, which was published May 3rd, today, says, ban assault weapons, buy them back, go after resistors, ex-prosecutor in Congress. Ban assault weapons and buy them back. It might cost $15 billion, but we can afford it. Pause, pump the brakes, hold up. $15 billion, we can afford that? We can't afford, you know, healthcare costs. We can't afford education. We have trouble affording our military. We can't afford welfare. We can't afford food stamps. All of these social programs we can't afford. We can't afford the wall. We can't afford the wall. But we can afford to buy back all of these assault weapons. Fucking goof does not know what the fuck he's talking about, first off. And that point, which is not something that I came up with, but I wanted to bring up, is I got that from Braving Ruin off Twitter, which I highly recommend looking up Braving Ruin's channel. He's, here we go. He says, we can't afford a $30 billion wall that impinges on the rights of illegal border crossers, but we can afford a $15 billion unconstitutional, unenforceable law that will necessarily get American citizens killed in attempts to enforce it. The liberal mind. So yeah, Braving Ruin is a good commentator. I highly recommend looking him up. His channel is a lot of, well, not fun, but a lot of very interesting commentary. I'll put a link to his channel down in the description. I highly recommend looking up his Surveillance Inc. videos. Those are very good and very scary. You'll never ever, you watch those videos, you will never ever get like a Google Home or an Alexa or any of that bullshit. Just go watch those two videos. So, right off the bat, consider it an investment in our most important right, the right to live. There's a lot to unpack in that sentence. There is a lot to unpack in that. Gary Jackson never stood a chance. Gary was 28, and was so right off the bat, we're getting into emotional reasoning here. This is not an argument based on fact. This is right out the gate, we're jumping to emotional response. Gary was 28 and working as a security guard at a taco truck in Oakland, California, in 2009 when he saw Drashawn Lee carrying a sawed-off shotgun and reported it to police. 3 months later, Lee took his revenge by shooting and killing Jackson with an AK-47-style semi-automatic assault rifle. Well, assault rifle is a nonsense term. We all know that. I'm not going to get into that right here. I'm noticing something about this paragraph. I'm just gonna go out on a fucking limb here. Just... you know, ride with me on the speculation train for a little bit, fam. I'm just going to guess that Drashawn Lee isn't a white guy. Just off the top of my head. Besides, security guards, I have, well, I didn't get the job, but I have applied for a job as a security guard before, a couple of times. And one of the things when they brought us in to, like, do that, they did this stupid fucking thing where, you didn't know if you had the job yet, but they bring you in and, like, you do a drug test, and then, you know, we have an orientation thing where they go down all of the rules and shit that you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. The number one thing that they told me, and the rest of us when we were all applying for this job, was that you are not allowed to carry a gun or any real kind of weapon. I don't even think that you were allowed to carry pepper spray. Let alone, like, a truncheon or, you know, maybe a mag light, but, you know, that's not classed as a weapon. So you might be able to squeak by with a mag light, a heavy-duty flashlight, But you were not allowed to carry an actual weapon. If you saw something, you observed and you backed off and you reported it to the police. You called the cops immediately. That was the one thing that they drilled into our heads over and over and over again. So, yeah, this guy probably did his job properly, you know? And it's sad that Drashawn Lee took revenge and killed him. But that's not the AK-47's fault or the fault of the sawed-off shotgun. That's the fault of Drashawn Lee. He was a fucking criminal and a murderer. So, you know, I don't understand how you can blame the goddamn gun over something that this asshole did. I was the prosecutor who persuaded a jury to convict Lee and persuaded a judge to put him away for 65 years to life. Good. Kudos. No, I'm being dead-ass serious. Kudos. Good. I'm glad you got that asshole put away. Good. But Gary's autopsy report still haunts me. I fucking imagine it would. You know, that's not something that's easy to live with. I mean, it's not your fault that the guy died, and you did good by serving justice and getting the guy who killed him put away. You know, you did your fucking job. You did everything you could. That wasn't your fault. You know, it can haunt you, but it's not your responsibility. You know, you're just the prosecutor. You're not the cop or, you know, someone who could have taken care of this before Gary Jackson was murdered. Trauma surgeons and coroners will tell you the high velocity bullet fire. Oh my God. Here we go into the buzzwords. Buzzword salad. Like, I know I just complimented this guy, but I'm gonna have to fucking tear him down here. So, high velocity bullets. What are physics? What are physics, fam? How do physics? High velocity bullets. There's not any. These are the same kinds of people that argue that somebody with a 9mm handgun has no chance against somebody with an AR-15 because the AR-15, the bullets from the AR-15 travel faster than the 9mm bullets. It's so fucking retarded. Military style. No. No. The weapons that the military uses are way better than the shit that we get civilian. There is a very good reason that you have to apply for permits, even if you're ex-military, to acquire military-style weapons. You know, if it's semi-auto, it's not military-style, fam. Just because it looks like something that you've seen guys in movies dressed up as military dudes use does not mean it's military style. And an AK-47 is absolutely not military style. That's the shit that the, like, Afghani goat fuckers use to fight off the U.S. Military in Afghanistan that they bought off of the Russians, like, fucking 20 years ago. It's outdated tech. It's, like, an AK-47 is not top of the line. It's certainly not what our military uses. And assault weapons is just, it doesn't mean anything. There's no definition to assault weapons. The definition of assault weapons is whatever we think an assault weapon would be. So if you're looking through a catalog and you see two different guns that are functionally the exact same, but one of them has the black polymer stock that looks scary, and the other one is a wood stock. They're the exact same gun, but one of them has a wood stock and the other one has the black polymer. The black polymer one is the assault weapon. That's basically what assault weapon means, scary looking gun. That's what assault weapon means. Like, my brother has a 9mm rifle. You know, it's not all that powerful. It's a varmint gun, basically. But it looks scary because it's all black and it's got all these rails on it for attachments. And it comes with a faux suppressor built into it. It looks scary. It looks like an assault weapon, but it's not. It's really simple. Like, yeah, you could kill someone with it, but you'd probably have to work for it a little bit. Moves almost three times as fast as a 9mm handgun bullet, delivering far more energy. Okay, I'm gonna be real with y'all. I haven't looked into, like, the physics of, you know, a AK-47 versus a 9mm handgun. But I'm almost dead certain that that is bullshit. I mean, yeah, it probably does deliver far more energy. I'll buy that. But you can kill somebody just as dead with a 9mm handgun as you can with a fucking... Like, I saw shit on Twitter from once again, it was Braving Ruin who had retweeted it. It was a video of some people like acting gangsta in their car. And there was this thought in the driver's seat. And she was waving around this, what looked like a 9mm handgun. It just looked like a Glock. And she was just waving it around, finger on, no trigger discipline, had her finger on the trigger. And the guy was like, you know, the guy in the passenger seat was like, hey, you know, maybe you don't want to be waving that gun around. And then the thing goes off and it hits the guy in the head. And he just stops and like leans over and he's like, and there's blood coming out of this wound on his head. Like, I watched a guy die, basically. And it was like, I didn't put it on my timeline or anything like that. I'm just like, that disturbed the absolute fuck out of me. The guy in the back seat was gone. He jumped out of that fucking car and was gone. But, it's just as deadly. It's just as deadly, but you can do more damage with certain types of guns. Like, for example, a 357 does a hell of a lot more damage than a 9mm. But I'm almost dead ass certain that it's not because the bullet travels faster. I would have to do a little bit of research into the physics of how guns work. Maybe I should try and get Mr. X on the podcast one day. He might be able to correct my misconceptions on that shit. But this sounds ignorant as fuck, dude. I'm just saying. But there's links here. So let's see. Is this all one? It looks like it's all the same. What I saw treating the victims from Parkland should change the debate on guns from the Atlantic. Their wounds were radically different. This just looks like propaganda. I'm just saying. You can find it's the first link that the guy puts in the article. To a radiologist? Aren't radiologists the guys who do the X-ray scans and shit, the CAT scans and stuff? Isn't that what the radiologist is? I'm not sure. I'm not a medical expert or anything like that. I never had training in medicine. So I don't know what. I think that a radiologist is the guy who runs like the CAT scans and like the X-rays and shit. Low velocity handgun. This sounds like bullshit to me. I'll have to do some more research and then report back on what I'm able to determine about high velocity and low velocity bullets, but I'm pretty sure that any bullet can kill you if it hits you in the right place. The bullets create cavities through the victim, wrecking a wider swath of tissue. Okay, I thought that he was about to. I thought he meant to use "wreaking" there, like wreaking havoc. No, it was he's using the right word. Organs and blood vessels, and a low recoil weapon with a higher capacity magazine. I mean, at least he used the fucking magazine right. You know, at least he didn't call it a fucking clip. Means more of these deadlier bullets can be fired accurately and quickly without reloading. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. An assault weapon, then, is a handheld weapon of war, capable of spraying a crowd with more lethal fire in seconds. It depends on what kind of war we're talking about here. Like, you're not going to find the military of any developed country utilizing anything that's used in any of these mass shootings. Is it the weapons that they have are far more efficient? Anyway. So, Gary didn't stand much chance. First graders and teachers in Newton, Connecticut, didn't either. I'm not sure what Newtown, Connecticut. I'm not sure what Newtown is. I don't remember the Newtown shooting. Like, I vaguely remember something about the Newtown shooting, but I don't remember the exact, is that Sandy Hook? I'm not sure. I don't know. Nor did dancers at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, nor, are you actually bringing up the Pulse nightclub? Like, okay, yeah, if the Newtown shooting is the one that I'm thinking of, if that's Sandy Hook, then yeah, that was just a crazy guy. The Pulse nightclub, that was a specific hit. Like, that guy wanted to kill gay people because he was a Muslim. And probably had some fucked up, you know, homosexual shit going on in his own head that he just couldn't deal with because his religion forbids homosexuality. Explicitly. It's pretty specific about that. Teenagers at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland, Florida, nor the people at the Waffle House outside Nashville. Like so many American mass shooting victims in recent decades, their doom was all but assured by the murderer's tool. No, not really. Not really. Like, a couple of weeks back, I did the article from the BBC about the mass stabbing in that Chinese subway where, God, I don't even remember. It was like 140 people were injured and like 30 of them died or something like that. It was a ridiculously high number just from like five dudes running through this fucking station with big kitchen knives and just slashing people as they went. But it's not the tool, it's the people doing it. There are hundreds of thousands of proper law-abiding gun owners that never do any of this kind of shit. Any of it, ever. And most gun deaths are suicides anyway. So you're pointing at an extreme, extreme minority and stating that this is indicative of a wider problem, which you just do not have the fucking data to back up, which is why you're relying on appeals to emotion rather than data, because the data blows you the fuck out whenever it's looked at honestly. Nonetheless, we can give ourselves and our children the chance these victims never had. We can finally act to remove weapons designed for war from our streets once and for all. No, you can't. Look, dude, America is right next door to Mexico, okay? Mexico is a hellhole of gang violence and cartels. They have all kinds of weapons. And if you think that shit won't make its way across the border, you're fucking delusional. You should know this, especially since you live in fucking California, where Eric Holder orchestrated selling these weapons to the cartels. Like they weren't gonna fucking file the serial numbers off of it. Like that's why they lost track of all those guns. They didn't put special, you know, tracking devices in the guns that the cartel guys would never find so that they could, you know, use a satellite to track. No, they left the serial numbers on them. Like these fucking cartel guys aren't gonna file the fucking serial numbers off. But as evidenced by this op-ed, nobody ever said that California Democrats were intelligent. But they're not weapons designed for war. The AR-15, in particular, is definitely not a weapon of war. Now, you could use it in a war, but that is not what it's designed for. And you would be at a severe disadvantage going up against, like, the U.S. military. You could do it. It's doable. Like, I'm not invalidating the whole, you know, armed resistance against the government tyranny thing. But you're not as well equipped as the other guys. Just saying. Like, you could totally take them on. You can win. You can even win. But you're not as well equipped as the other guys. Just saying. It's just, that's the reality of the situation. But yeah, AR-15s are designed for, like, home defense, hunting, shit like that. It's not to be used in war. Or it's not meant to be used in war. Like I say, it can be, but that's not the purpose. Reinstating the federal assault weapons ban that was in effect from 1994 to 2004 would prohibit manufacture and sales, but it would not affect weapons already possessed. That's very true. Also, if I remember my statistics right on the assault weapons ban, it didn't really do a whole lot to curb gun crime. It was just ineffective. It didn't do its intended job, which, you know, of course it didn't. This isn't something that you can just legislate away, dumbass. And yeah, it would not affect weapons already possessed. This would leave millions of assault weapons in our communities for decades to come. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you realize that. I'm fucking glad you realize that. You're not as dumb as you look. Or looking at this next paragraph, maybe you fucking are. Instead, we should ban possession of military-style semi-automatic weapons. You do know that military-style does not mean what you think it means. And that semi-automatic is basically every gun that's not, like, I've got a revolver over here. It's a what do they call it? Hang on, I got the bullets right here. It's a 22 maxi mag. That's the bullets that it takes, the long 22 bullets. It's single action, which means that you have to pull back the hammer to get it to fire. If you just pull the trigger, the trigger isn't even able to be pulled when you have the hammer down. So that's not semi-automatic. That's something that you, like, a semi-automatic means you pull the trigger once and it fires one bullet. You have to cock that one every single time. So it's cock, boom, cock, boom, cock, boom. And I'm just going to keep saying cock because I like the word cock. But anyway, that wouldn't be affected by this ban. Now, the 9mm rifle that my brother bought recently would be, because it is semi-automatic. However, it is not military style. So would that be covered under this? I don't know, because Democrats really aren't specific. What they want to do is they want to just disarm the populace. They want nobody to have guns, period, so that they can do whatever they want to you, because they're power-hungry lunatics. Instead, we should ban possession of military-style semi-automatic assault weapons. We should buy back, pump the brakes, hold up, pause, just right there. You cannot buy back what you never owned in the first place, okay? a free company designed these weapons and manufactured them, and then they sold these weapons to licensed firearms dealers, and these licensed firearms dealers sold them to free citizens, as is their right. The government was never involved in this transaction beyond tax and background checks, which happen every single time you buy a firearm. If the background check doesn't catch something, then that's not the fault of the person buying the gun. That's not the fault of the seller. That is the fault of the government for not catching this shit. Like, for example, you want to talk about Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School? I think that's it. Yeah, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. That guy was known to not just the local sheriff, not just the police, but the FBI knew about this guy. He had reported himself to the police, saying that he thought he was a danger to himself and others. And they did nothing. He was known. And it was a massive failure of the law, the legal system itself, at every single level, that allowed that shooting to take place. That is not the fault of the gun. I don't think he even bought the gun he used. I think he got it illegally. I don't remember the exact circumstances of him buying the gun, or getting a hold of the gun. However he got a hold of it, he wasn't supposed to have it. And it's a failure of the legal system, not, you know, anyone involved in these transactions. But the government never owned these weapons. They cannot buy back what they never owned. You would be buying them from people. And once again, you would be making it mandatory that people sell you these weapons. And you could also, you know, run into trouble with people just manufacturing guns just in their backyard to cash in. Which is going to run your little $15 billion estimate up a little bit, just a hair, just a hair. But yes, the government cannot buy back. And if you're making it a law that people have to sell them to you, then it is a forced confiscation. It is not a buyback, even if you are reimbursing people for their property. This is not a buyback. This is a forced confiscation with reimbursement. We should buy, not buy back, such weapons from all who choose to abide by the law, and we should criminally prosecute any who choose to defy it by keeping their weapons. The ban would not apply to law enforcement agencies or shooting clubs. Okay, so yeah, I get it. You're tipping your hand a little bit too far. It would not apply to law enforcement, so you mean you want law enforcement to be able to run over literally anybody. Just to have unchecked power. I'll refer you to the Battle of Athens, Georgia. Athens, just look up the Battle of Athens. I did an entire post about it. I'll look up the post, on my blog right fast. Yeah, here we go. The post that I made is called The Battle of Athens, A History Lesson on Guns. And, in it, I give a kind of overview of what happened in the Battle of Athens. But basically, it went down like this. The sheriff did not want to be, he was very corrupt. They were, taxing people. They were giving, false tickets. They were just basically fucking people over and stealing their money. And so when the election came around, the sheriff, attempted to steal the ballots, from the polling locations and count them in secret, as well as shooting a black man for the crime of attempting to vote while black. That fucking happened. Let me see if I can find that part. Yeah, so a group of GIs, about 400 GIs, got together and decided to make a coalition to legally oust these people from power, the sheriff and his thugs. It was an entire political machine that was orchestrating this. So the sheriff went full dictatorship on the county, hiring 200 thugs from neighboring counties and towns as deputies to enforce their will, and paid them a princely sum to do so. It adds up to about $630 a day in 2017 dollars, so of course these men were eager to take the job and do whatever the sheriff told them. These men, some of them ex-convicts, patrolled voting stations and poll locations to prevent certain people from voting, control the votes of those they allowed to vote, and attempted to steal the ballots to count them in secret. What this led up to was the execution of an elderly black farmer, Tom Gillespie, for the crime of attempting to vote while black. Let me say that again for emphasis. These men executed an American citizen for attempting to exercise his civil liberties and vote in what should have been a free election because he was black. They shot him in the back as he was fleeing the polling station, and he died from this wound. This needs particular emphasis because it needs to be made clear that in American history, the attempt to restrict the right to bear arms has been used against black people to restrict their ability to defend themselves. It is not, at its fundamentals, a racist policy, but it has absolutely and frequently been used for racist ends, primarily against black people in America. So if you truly do care about the rights of minorities, you will stop trying to disarm them, because then they will be unable to defend themselves against people like these evil men trying to cement power for themselves, and will prevent the murder of more people like Tom Gillespie. Now, this ignited a firestorm, and basically it wound up with the sheriff and his deputies sequestering themselves in the town jail, and a bunch of GIs getting together, raiding the local National Guard armory, getting a bunch of dynamite and weapons and getting into a shootout with these guys. They wound up blowing the front of the jail off with the dynamite, liberating the ballots from these guys, and then counting them fairly, and it turns out that the corrupt sheriff had lost the election. So if you want a good history lesson on why firearm rights are so very important, I will put a link to that post down in the description. But yeah, that's what this comes down to, is that you want people to not be able to defend themselves against corrupt and evil politicians and their jackboot thug enforcers. Which, given how nervous Democrats are about Trump, I would say psychotically deranged about Trump, but I'll be nice and say concerned. Given how concerned Democrats are about Trump, it seems very unwise that you would want to disarm the populace in a period in history where you are worried about fascism coming to America and concentration camps and taking gay rights away and shit like that. It seems very unwise to disarm the populace, one of the only things that keeps the government in check. And giving that authority to law enforcement only, that ability, that force to be able to defend themselves, giving that to law enforcement only shows me that all you care about is being able to do whatever you want to whoever you want, whenever you want. You don't care about the little guy. You don't care about private citizens. You care about being able to enforce your will on others because you expect law enforcement to just follow along with whatever you want to do. Well, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. There have been attempts at gun confiscation and shit like that in, I want to say, Kentucky, and somewhere on the order of 63% of law enforcement officers actively refused to enforce the law. And it was repealed, as it rightly should have been. There is also an instance in, I want to say, Oregon, maybe Washington State. Justicar talks about this in one of his videos. I don't know if I'll be able to find the exact video, because he's got a million videos on gun control. But basically, they tried to institute one of these gun confiscation laws, and the people showed up at the town council meeting with their guns and forced the politicians to sit down and listen to what they had to say. And the law was rightfully repealed, because this isn't your fucking place. You do not have this authority. So yeah, you're not fooling anybody, dude. There's something new and different about the surviving Parkland high schoolers' demands. They dismiss the moral equivalence we've made for far too long regarding the Second Amendment. I've been guilty of it myself, telling constituents and reporters that we can protect the Second Amendment and protect lives. Well, we can. We can. That's not a moral equivalence. That's not a false equivalence. That's something that, yeah, I'm not even sure it's an equivalence, but that's something that's absolutely doable. We've done it for 200 years in this country, plus 280 years, something like that. Yeah, it's doable. It's absolutely doable. The Parkland teens have taught us that there is no right more important than every student's right to come home after class. False. False. My right to bear arms is more important than their right to life. Because my right to bear arms isn't just my right to bear arms. It's their right to bear arms. And besides, school shootings are insanely fucking rare. I mean, insanely rare. You get one every once in a while. It's not something that happens every day. It's not like we're talking about shootings in Chicago, where there's a mass shooting every week, probably more than one every week in Chicago, and cities like it. It's just, like, you don't fucking care about this shit. You're standing on the dead bodies of these teenagers to grab more power for yourself so that people aren't able to defend themselves against your tyranny. That's what you're fucking doing. And you're not slick, motherfucker. The right to live is supreme over any other. You have to be able to defend your right to live, and I don't trust the fucking police. I don't trust the cops. on a principle level. I just don't trust policemen. But more than that, even if I am just a law-abiding citizen, which I am, I don't trust them to protect me. Because if somebody breaks into my house in the middle of the night and I call cops, they're minutes away. Like I've said this before, in my town, there's like maybe two stateies, two state troopers, and four or five actual sheriff's deputies that run around and take care of crime that happens in the two cities that I live in. So there's, I'm going to try and not give too much away here, but there's the city that I live in, and then there is a river, and right across the river, there is our sister city, and they're both under the same jurisdiction of the sheriff. So the sheriff's deputies that are protecting my town are also protecting that town, and these towns have a lot of country out, you know, on the outskirts. There's a lot of places that it takes a while to fucking get to. And I'm, by a while, I mean, it takes me maybe 5-10 minutes to drive out to my aunt's house. My aunt lives by herself. Recently, her daughter moved back in with her, but it's two women living in this house by themselves. The cops take 45 minutes to get out to their house in case anything goes wrong. Recently, my aunt has been dealing with people breaking into her house or trying to break into her house. She got a security system. She bought a gun, a new gun. She had a gun, but shit happened and she doesn't have it anymore. That's all I'm going to say on that. If somebody breaks into their house in the middle of the night and they call cops, it's going to take the cops about a half hour at the least to get out there. Anything could happen in that half hour. You know, my aunt and her daughter could be raped and murdered in that half hour, and the cops won't be able to do shit about it when they show up. So the only solution that I see as a person who tries to adhere to a certain code of morals is to allow them to have firearms to defend themselves in case something like that happens, as it has been happening to them. This isn't a hypothetical. This is something that is going on right now. People have been trying to break into her fucking house. So you're telling me that my aunt and her daughter should not be able to defend themselves, should have to wait on the cops to show up and defend them? Because to me, that sounds an awful lot like you want my aunt raped and murdered to become another statistic and not be able to defend herself. That's what it sounds like to me. And it sounds like you're a pretty evil fuck from where I'm sitting. Our courts haven't found a constitutional right to have assault weapons anyway. Yeah, they fucking do. You bring up District of Columbia versus Heller. Jesus Christ. When the Supreme Court held in 2008 that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess a firearm, Justice Antonin Scalia, God rest his soul, that was my addition, not his, wrote that this right is not unlimited and it is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. Now, personally, I disagree vehemently with Justice Scalia on that. I really don't think that that is the case. I think that it is unlimited. I think that anything that the military is allowed to have, the civilian should be allowed to have. I should be able to own a tank, a functional tank, with ammunition for the big gun. Now, granted, a tank is a crew vehicle. You need, like, five dudes to run a tank. I don't know the exact specifics, but I did have a friend who, after high school and a few years of just kind of fucking around, went and joined the military and went through basic training to become an M1 Abrams tank operator. And they would do all kinds of exercises and shit like that. And he would come back and tell us stories about how the tank operated. You need like four or five guys to run a tank. I should be able to own one if I'm able to afford it. Because the military has one. And I want what the military has. They shouldn't be the only ones out here with just the fucking big roll-over motherfuckers weapons. So yeah, I think that Justice Scalia was wrong. Since that District of Columbia versus Heller decision, four federal appeals courts have upheld assault weapons bans. That doesn't make them right. Just because the court does something doesn't mean it's just or right. You know, that's not how this fucking works. Courts let women off for child murder all the time. That doesn't make them right. Courts do not deign to punish women for rape all the time. That doesn't make them right. Courts do not deign to punish women for false rape accusations all the time, and it doesn't make them right. Just because the court says something doesn't make the court right. Many other firearms are available for self-protection, they found, and the danger that assault weapons pose to society is a legitimate reason for states and localities to ban them. Yeah, there are many other firearms available. For example, I feel fairly confident that if somebody busts in to our house, that six shooter right there, I can handle it. I can probably handle whatever is going to come through the door. However, it's very, very fiddly. I'm going to have to look this shit up. The cylinder. Thank you. Duck, duck, go. The cylinder. The cylinder of the revolver that I have does not pop out of the gun. So you can't just take... You have to take the gun apart to get the cylinder out. There is a little hatch on the back right next to the hammer that you just slide it open, and then you have to put the bullets in one at a time. And like I say, it's a six shooter, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it takes a minute to reload it. Not like a full minute. It's not like we're talking musket here. If you're good with it, then you could probably reload it fairly quickly. But I'm not that fast. My hands shake, you know, and in a high stress situation, I doubt that I could reload that in a very timely manner. That's why I also have the shotgun over there. So I know from, you know, other weapons, other firearms that are available for self-protection. I've got a hunting shotgun, and I've got this six-shooter single-action revolver. But I would prefer to have an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine, because then I would know for a fact I'm able to deal with whatever might come through that door or window or whatever, and not have to change weapons. You know, what if 8 people bust up in my house with guns? That six-shooter is not going to deal with all of them. What if I miss? That's a possibility. I would say that the benefit of self-protection that should be a right for every single citizen of every country in the world, every person, the right to self-protection outweighs the dangers that assault weapons pose to society. That's my position on that. It's like that that meme, how many children have to die before you realize that gun control would save lives, or that you admit that gun control is effective, and then the angel comes down from heaven with the face of the guy from Full Metal Jacket, I think, and he hands him a piece of paper and then floats off into the sky, and the dude looks at the piece of paper and it says, all of them. Yeah, all of them. We're done playing nice with you people. All of them. Come and take them, bitch. Australia got it right. Despite the fact that Australia's violent crime has actually increased since their mandatory confiscation. And if I remember right, gun crime also increased after that, because the people weren't able to defend themselves. Big shock, am I right? After a man used military-style weapons to kill 35 people in April of 1996, that nation adopted strict new measures and bought back, you sneaky fuck, 643,726 newly illegal rifles and shotguns at market value. Holy shit. That's a lot of fucking guns. The cost, an estimated $230 million in U.S. dollars at the time, was funded by a temporary 0.2% tax levy on national health insurance. That's a really weird way to orchestrate that. Like, I'm not even getting into, like, how ineffective it was, or, you know, how bad, and it didn't even stop, like, there are more guns in Australia right now than there were before the fucking confiscation. So I'm not even getting into that. Why national health insurance? Why jack up the tax on that? I don't know, it just seems weird. America won't get off that cheaply. No, it won't. No, it absolutely will not. The cost in dollars and human lives will be astro-fucking-nomical, and it will all be laid at your feet. You fucking wannabe monarch. Gun ownership runs so deep that we don't even know how many military-style semi-automatic rifles are in U.S. civilian hands. Well, we can get fairly accurate estimates. Just, you know, we don't know exactly, but we have an idea. Like, there are more guns in the United States than there are people in the United States. I do know that. There is one legal gun, or no, I'm sorry. There are 8 legal guns for every 10 people in the United States. So if you factor in illegal weapons, you're probably looking at like 14, 15 guns per 10 U.S. citizens in America right now. But that's a serious estimate. I don't have any numbers to back up my estimate on how many guns are actually in America. But the figures for the 8 by 10 are very well put out there. They're easy to find. So yeah, you're never going to get it. This is unenforceable. First off, this is completely unenforceable. There's no way in hell that you're going to be able to do this, number one. And if you try to do this, it's going to lead to a civil war, number two. Number three, fuck you. Fuck you. Based on manufacturing figures and other indirect data, there could be 15 million assault weapons out there. If we offer $200 to bad you, no. I'm sorry, dude. I don't own any of these types of weapons. I would really, really like to. I like guns. But, you know, $200 is not, like, okay, hang on. I'm just gonna pop open a new tab. Let's go to, I'll just, buy AR-15. Booyah. This is from gunbroker.com. The, Bushmaster AR-15 for sale. Okay, I'm just gonna run down on some, they got a whole lot of prices here, so, you know, I'm just gonna run down the first couple of them. So we got a Bushmaster XM-15 Quad Rail A3 223 Remington 16-inch, 30 plus 1 for $839.09. The second one is an APF AR-15 Upper 450 Bushmaster 16-inch SS Shaw Barrel for $649. The Bushmaster AR-15 20-inch 450 Upper 91702 5RD Mag AR-15 is $579. And it doesn't get better from there. It took me, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guns to get down to the Bushmaster M16 Full Auto Lower Parts Kit AR-15 223. This is a parts kit. This isn't even an actual gun. That's $200. $180, really. The next parts kit on the list is fucking $385. And then $395. And then, you know, another parts kit. And then another part. And then more parts kits. None of these actually assembled weapons. Okay, I found one. I found one way down there. There's Bushmaster AR-15 Carbine 223 Mint Coal Stock. I'm not sure what the coal stands for. But that's for $115.23. So, yeah, no. $200 per weapon is not, like, you're terminally fucking ignorant about what you're talking about. Guns are expensive. And they frequently cost more than $200. There's no way in hell you're going to get somebody who paid $1,000 for a fucking gun to turn it in for $200 on the barrel head. No way. Nuh-uh. I wouldn't do it. As many local governments have, then it would cost about $3 billion at $1,000 each. The cost would be about $15 billion. $1,000 each, now you're fucking talking. Now you're talking, well, it's an unfair trade, but it's fair price. Depending on the gun. And how well it's been taken care of, and, you know, how often it's used, and all of that shit. So, there's a lot that goes into gun price. But, you know, $1,000, now you're talking a reasonable price per gun, you know, and you can adjust it on a case-by-case basis, but this is irrelevant, because this is just an immoral thing to do. You do not have the right to tell people that they do not have the right to this property. It's no small sum, but let's put it in context. The federal government is spending an estimated $4 trillion this year. Oh my god. Oh, that hurts my soul. $15 billion would be 0.375% of that, not that we must spend it all in one year. Okay, that's fair, but that still, like, doesn't negate, like, you can make it sound as reasonable as you want, but at the end of the day, this is fundamentally immoral and theft, even if you are paying people for their property. You're saying that people have to give these up, but we'll cut you a check for stealing this thing from you that, you know, we shouldn't be allowed to take from you anyway. Meanwhile, the GOP's tax quote-unquote reform, a giveaway to corporations and the rich that threw comparatively meager scraps to working families. Yeah, dude. But no, people already got their fucking tax returns back. They saw, okay? They fucking saw. They know. You're not fooling anybody with this shit. It's projected to increase the national debt by $1.9 trillion over the next decade. I mean, what is the fucking national debt right now? I don't even fucking know. Oh, holy shit. It's so much that we're never going to be able to pay it back. Like, the economy's going to collapse. What is the U.S. national debt? U.S. national debt clock, real time. Oh my god. This is just No, stop going up with the numbers. Oh my God, I should have never gone to this website. This is usdebtclock.org. I don't even know what that number is. I can't even count that fucking high. Holy shit. Holy shit. It's like $70 trillion, according to this. Urgh. This hurts. This absolutely hurts. Oh my God. I'm going to click out of that because that's just, that does not feel good in my soul place. Yeah, no, dude, we don't have the money for this shit. even if the tax reform bill is going to increase the national debt by as much as you say it is, we still don't have the money for this bullshit. We don't have the money for fucking welfare, and y'all want to keep that shit, so no, we don't have the money for this. What is it worth to American taxpayers to not see our families, friends, and neighbors cut down in a hail of gunfire? Consider this an investment in averting carnage and heartache and loss. No. No. You want to avert carnage and heartache and loss? Cut all of these social programs, cut all of the welfare, all of that shit. Get rid of all of it. Just rip the fucking Band-Aid off. Get rid of all of it, and then we might be able to, in like 5 years, we might be able to start actually paying off our national debt. But no, we cannot afford this. When I think of Jackson, I think of all the others who died with wounds like his. I think about my dad and two brothers who put their lives on the line as law enforcement officers. Kudos to your dad and brothers. I think about my 11-month-old son, Nelson, and the safe classrooms I want him to learn in. Well, don't worry, man. They're putting rocks, buckets of rocks in the classroom. They'll be fine. Just get your kid involved in, like, T-ball when he's little, and then move up to baseball, and he'll be able to huck those rocks really accurately. America has a deadly problem, a problem other developed nations have avoided or addressed. No, they haven't. No, we just saw in fucking, in Britain, where they're still having gun crime problems. It's not something that, and in Australia, they got, it does not work. None of the numbers back up your fucking narrative, which is why you have to resort to these fucking, like, you can try and dress it up with all of these numbers that you want, but the facts are not on your fucking side, dude. Some say we're already too far gone to take corrective action, but we cannot have a defeatist attitude about this. It's not about defeatism, man. It's about fuck you. That's what it comes to. That's what it boils down to. Fuck you. Come and take him if you think he can. That's not, we're done with the defeatist bullshit. We're done being quote unquote reasonable about this shit. We're done giving you any fucking thing. Okay. So no, fuck you. Come and take him if you think you're man enough. How many lives are you willing to sacrifice to get your gun ban? How many? Because it's going to be a lot. Fixing our problem requires boldness and will be costly, but the cost of letting it fester will be far higher for our wallets and for our souls. Okay, now if you want to get into actual mathematics, then I'm going to need you to provide me with numbers of every single person that is killed with guns in the U.S., not including suicides. We're not counting suicides in this because those people will find a way to kill themselves other than with guns. Guns are just the most effective tool that they have at their disposal right now. So we're not counting suicides. Every person murdered by a gun by someone else in the United States per year. And then I want you to calculate how many people, just we're getting into theoreticals and shit like that, but just humor me. Calculate how many people would die in a civil war in the United States, and tell me whether or not that cost is worth your utopia, because that's what it's going to be. It's a lot of fucking people are going to die, and it's not just going to be civilians, innocent civilians, I might add. It's going to be military people. It's going to be police officers, like your father and your two brothers. It's going to be people like you. If the Civil War pops off, it will not end well for the people trying to confiscate the weapons. You might win in the end, but untold death and destruction will be your reward, will be something that you will have to bear for the rest of your life. And I don't think you're prepared to pay that price. Because it's not going to be you out here confiscating people's guns and getting shot at. You're not going to be one of the people who dies. So how many lives are you willing to sacrifice? Let's give me a number. How many, you keep talking about how many lives is worth it to have gun confiscation. I want you to put a number on how many lives is worth your utopia. How many people are you willing to order to die to get what you want? And then furthermore, you know, on top of that, how many women are you willing to let get raped? Because I see a lot of anti-gunners talking a lot of shit about how a gun is a coward's weapon, and, you know, you should just fight the person that wants to, you know, do whatever to you. So, a 90-pound woman going up against a, I'll be generous, 180-pound reasonably fit guy. All other things being equal, they're in different weight classes, all other things being equal, who's gonna win that fight? That's what I thought. Now, give the woman a gun. Now who wins? That's what I thought. Which, by the way, that's a horrendously effective rhetorical tactic to use against these gun grabbers. Just ask them why they want women to be raped. Because, despite what people may tell you, women are, on average, smaller and weaker than men. Now, if women aren't able to defend themselves effectively against men with something like a firearm, men could theoretically do whatever they wanted to women. So, why do you want women to be raped? Why do you not want women to be able to defend themselves against their rapists? Huh? Curious, isn't it? It's curious how that flips the fucking script on this and shows you exactly how evil this kind of shit is. For all my gun rights defenders out there, feel free to take that one and use it. It shuts them up really quick. Really fucking quick. But yeah, okay, so that's the end of that article. I should probably get the sponsor roll out here. So yeah. Let's get into the sponsors, and then I've got another article that I want to talk about, because I'm up to the fucking gills with conservatism. Just up to fucking here with it. Okay. So, if you like what I do here, and you want to support me, then there are a couple of ways that you can do that. Now, I have seen, from Braving Ruin, again, the guy's an amazing source of information if you keep up with his Twitter feed, because he doesn't do as many videos as you're like, go bully Braving Ruin into making videos, because his videos are really fucking good. He recently got in contact with, the Twitter account for Hatreon, and, apparently those guys are looking into alternate methods of processing payments and getting their website back up and running. So, I still have my Hatreon, I still have the password for it and everything like that, so when that comes back up, then I will, you know, I will put that back into the thing, but I haven't heard from Hatreon in for fucking ever, and it's just, like, I'm giving it up as a lost cause, but I'll keep my eye on it, just in case. Now, maker support is another option, but recently there have been some problems with Stripe, the company that they use to process their payments, not processing their payments, and them not telling people for, like, a fucking week or something like that. It's been a ridiculous amount of time. And they put out this kind of boilerplate thing to kind of stave off the backlash that they've been getting. But the Quartering, actually, the Magic the Gathering guy, did a pretty good video kind of explaining everything that's going wrong with Maker Support. And Hard Bastard has also covered what's going wrong with Maker Support. And he has officially shut down his Maker Support account because of the fuckery that's been going on with all of this stuff. So, if you don't feel comfortable with using Maker Support, then I totally understand. If you do, that's up to you. I've still got the account up and ready. So if you want to help me out, toss a couple of shekels in the hat, you can do that via Maker Support. And hopefully they'll get their shit worked out soon. I'm not pulling my support for either website, but it's not looking good. It's really not. So, other ways that you can help me out. First off, you can make a Steemit account and you can follow me on Steemit. Because Steemit has an internal cryptocurrency where you can transfer it over to something like Bitcoin or Ethereum or Litecoin or something. And you can actually get paid real money for your writing. So I'm cross-posting every post that I make on my blog, over there, and I'm putting up original fiction on that website, and I'm also, putting, links to my podcast over there. So if you want to help me out, then you can do so via Steemit. That's kind of the most direct method at this point. Just go over it. Actually read the stuff, man. I would appreciate it if you guys would read the stuff if you're actually interested in the short fiction that I'm putting out, because that's an easier way to kind of pay me, quote unquote, for the work that I'm putting in. It's funky the way that the website works, and it's not entirely on the level. But it is actually getting me paid. I actually am making money off of the website. So that's kind of the most direct way, is just like keep up with my Steam it and, you know, upvote the posts that I make and shit like that. And comment. Let me know what you guys think about the stuff that I'm doing over there. I would really appreciate it on the fiction, because I'm not the best writer in the world or anything like that. I think I'm okay. I think I'm pretty good, actually. But, you know, I know I'm not a great or anything like that. So any advice or, you know, things that you guys would like to see in stories or commentaries, critique, red pen, that kind of stuff, I would be most appreciative. I would actually be just as appreciative of the critique and commentary as I would of the internet fun bucks that the site spits out. Also, the fiction's up for free. You can just go over there and read it. You ain't gotta pay shit. Not out of your wallet, anyway. The upvoting and shit works on an entirely different system. I'm not entirely certain how it works. I just know that it does, because it keeps spitting out money, and it keeps getting transferred into my bank account. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's one way that you can directly help me out. Another way is that you can go and buy the Cat Kimbridge audiobooks that I've done. The Cat Kimbridge Chronicles is some good old superversive military science fiction that's almost fucking pulp. It's really, really good, guys. I'm not even fucking around, because I get royalties off of these books. I did 6, 7, and 8 in the series, and I enjoyed the books. I started on book 7. So I enjoyed book 7 and 8 so much that in between doing book 8 and book 6, I went and I bought the rest of the audiobooks that were already out, because, you know, I wanted to find out what happened in the story. I was just that interested. And I actually had to get in contact with the author and be like, hey, why, like, I had listened to books one through five, and I had been like, hey, book six isn't up, you know, is there a reason for it? And he was like, well, the guy isn't really doing it, so I could cancel that contract and give it over to you if you really want to do it. I was like, yes. Yeah, fuck yes. But yeah, they're really fucking good books, guys. I'm not even kind of fucking around. Like I say, you don't have to start at book one. If you want to just help me out, then you can go buy book 7, 8, and 6. But I highly recommend them all. Andrew Beery is a really good author. And he's just doing this for fun. Like, his stories are fun. Like, there is, you know, overarching, or, I'm not sure what the right word would be, but there are messages in the fiction. Like, it's very spiritual, it takes religion very seriously, but that doesn't get in the way of the story. It never feels like he's preaching to you. It's just something that these characters do. Like, there's a priest character, and one of the guys gets, put in this cloning tank, essentially. And when you die on the battlefield, it's got a record, the computer has a record of your brain, and all of your memories and everything, and it just builds you a new body that's got all of these, you know, superhuman abilities and shit like that. You're faster, you're stronger, you're more resilient, that kind of stuff. And he has this crisis of faith about whether or not he's actually human or if he's still himself. And the priest character kind of helps him work his way through it. And it's a really, really good fucking story. That character is one of my favorites in the entire series. But yeah, it's really good books, and I do get royalties off of the audiobooks that I've done, but I recommend buying them all. We also have the Dimension Bucket Media books. So we have Hell's 5-Minute Tales of Horror, which is exactly what it says on the tin. These are short microfiction and short stories that will take you no more than 5 minutes to read any single one of them. And Hell Richards is a pretty damn good author, I must say. I like her work. So if you are into short horror stories that'll give you a nice spook while you're going to work, then or you know, on the train or something like that, then go pick up Hell's 5-Minute Tales of Horror. Dimension of Cobwebs is a anthology of weird fiction from Grandmasters of the Craft, right when weird fiction was first becoming a thing. So some of these stories have been published in, like, Weird Tales and things like that, but it's got Lovecraft, Poe, Stoker, H.G. Wells, Hans Heinz Ewers, and somebody else that I'm forgetting. I always feel like there's one guy who's we've published in this anthology that I'm just missing, and I can't remember who the fuck it is. But yeah, it's a really good collection of stories. There's like 2, maybe 3 stories from every author in there, so it's a really good bang for your buck if you're looking for some really good short horror fiction. Darkest of Dreams is a horror anthology by the Dimension Bucket Media crew, so that's myself, Christopher Warren, aka Dimension Bucket, Connor Goff, aka Not Shade, and Gentleman Walrus, aka William Harmer. So if you want to find out how we approach horror fiction, then you can go over there and to Amazon and you can pick that book up. There is a link in the store page to all of this stuff on my blog, by the way. jimfear138.blogspot.com. And if you want to get an idea of how we write, I know that Nightshade and I have published several stories on our Steemits that you can go and read before you decide whether or not you want to pick this book up. I don't think William or Deebles, I know Deebles is on it, but I don't know if he's published many stories, but he's got his own website at Midnight. He's at Midnight Warren on Twitter, and his website is midnightauthor.com. And he publishes a lot of short fiction over there, just for free, for whoever the fuck wants it. So you can go get an idea of how we write before you go pick up this anthology. A Man Upstairs is a collection of creepy dark verse by Christopher Warren, who is neither a poet, nor does he enjoy freeform poetry. So of course the fucker had to go and write a book of it, and it's been getting pretty good reviews. I like what I've read of it so far. So if you are into creepy freeform poetry, this is where you want to fucking be. Cracked, C-R-A-C-K apostrophe D, by Connor Goff, is a story of a man who discovers a horrible secret behind reality and has to figure out what the hell's going on before reality completely fractures around him. Connor has a unique way of writing that I very much enjoy. I'm a huge fan of his work. And I think that you guys will be too once you go and read it, so go and pick up Cracked. Phoenix on the Sword is the first ever published Conan story by Robert E. Howard. Conan is king of Aquilonia, it is later in his life, and there is a plot to assassinate and depose him and install a puppet government in his stead, and he goes on a dream quest under a mountain and gets a magic sword, and there's a Stygian warlock who summons a baboon demon to go and kill the people that have betrayed him, and Conan winds up fighting it, and it's just a fucking awesome short story. But more of a novella, novelette, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is. But if you want to find out why I'm so fucking obsessed with Robert E. Howard, then this is the book that you want to go and get. All right, that is the end of the first round of sponsors. So, yeah, let's get stuck into the other shit that I wanted to go over. The whole failure of conservatism thing. Okay, so I've got an article that I do want to go over here, which is just annoying. It's just terminally fucking annoying. It just pisses me off so badly. But before I do that, I'm just getting kind of fed up with conservatives and conservatism in general. It seems to me like what conservatism is doing is, as other people have made this observation before, so I'm definitely not the first to comment on this, it seems like what they're doing is they are conserving the shit that progressives have installed. So there's actually a really, really fucking good quote that J.D. Alden has given me earlier today on Twitter. And I would just like to go ahead and read it for you guys because it perfectly sums up my my thoughts on this. So let me find this. Here we go. Now, I cannot read this guy's name. But this this quote right here, and I'll link the tweet in the description. This quote just perfectly sums up my shit with conservatism. Like, the absolute state, as I was talking about Britain earlier in the podcast, the absolute fucking state of conservatism. And this guy has perfectly encapsulated it in the 1800s. So this is from 1897, apparently. But even if it isn't, even if this is a fucking fake quote that somebody just pulled 100% out of their butthole, it perfectly sums up why I'm fed up with conservatives. So, it may be inferred again that the present movement for women's rights will certainly prevail from the history of its only opponent, Northern Conservatism. This is a party which never conserves anything. Its history has been that it demurs to each aggression of the Progressive Party, and aims to save its credit by a respectable amount of growling, but always acquiesces at last in the innovation. What was the resisted novelty of yesterday is today one of the accepted principles of conservatism. It is now conservative only in affecting to resist the next innovation, which will tomorrow be forced upon its timidity, and will be succeeded by some third revolution, to be denounced and then adopted in its turn. American conservatism is merely the shadow that follows radicalism as it moves further towards perdition. It remains behind it, but never retards it, and always advances near its leader. Its impotency is not hard indeed to explain. It is worthless, because it is the conservatism of expediency only, and not of sturdy principle. It intends to risk nothing serious for the sake of the truth, and has no idea of being guilty of the folly of martyrdom. It always, when about to enter a protest, very blandly informs the wild beast whose path it essays to stop that its bark is worse than its bite, and that it only means to save its manners by enacting its decent role of resistance. The only practical purpose which it now serves in American politics is to give enough exercise to radicalism to keep it in wind, meaning to keep it in shape, and to prevent it becoming pursy and lazy, from having nothing to whip. No doubt, after a few years, when women's suffrage shall have become an accomplished fact, conservatism will tacitly admit it into its creed, and thenceforward plume itself upon its wise firmness in opposing with similar weapons the extreme of baby suffrage. And when that, too, shall have been won, it will be heard declaring that the integrity of the American Constitution requires at least the refusal of suffrage to assess. There it will assume, with great dignity, its final position. Now, whatever you think about suffrage and women's right to vote and shit like that, hashtag repeal the 19th, but whatever you think about all that, this is the problem that I'm having with conservatism right now. I see a lot, and I mean a lot, of absolute faggotry coming from the conservative party. For example, perfect example, recently, Kanye West. Now, I really don't like talking about Kanye. I'm not a fan of his music, and I'll admit that I haven't listened to much of it. Now, what I have listened to, I've liked, like when he did that song with, what was it, Jamie Foxx, Gold Digger? I really liked that song. That was a good song. There's a couple of others, like the No One Man Should Have All That Power, that song. I really liked that one. I'm just not a Kanye fan. I never sat down and listened to a Kanye album, and maybe I should, honestly, because I was watching Hotep Jesus, which, follow that motherfucker on Twitter. I think he's at Vibe High, but you can probably find him by looking up Hotep Jesus. He's the motherfucker who walked into a Starbucks and demanded free coffee as reparations and got on Fox News because of it. I was watching one of his Periscopes the other day, and I gotta say, I love the fucking Hoteps. They're fun as fuck. Them niggas is woke. And I don't mean woke in the traditional progressive sense. I mean them niggas is woke. They know what they fucking doing. Like, if you want to find a group of black people that are actually trying to get black people to do right by themselves, the Hoteps are where it's fucking at. That's where it's fucking at. These guys are out here talking about responsibility, and they're talking about investments, and they're talking about bettering yourself, and they're talking about, you know, just how black people can get out of the fucking hole that they've been dug into over the past 60 years. I fucking love them. They're so much fun to watch go. It's like that ain't my struggle, and you know, you guys might not be my particular allies. You know, we're not opposed to each other, but y'all aren't fighting for the same things I am. I'm not necessarily fighting for the same things y'all are, but I respect what the fuck y'all are saying. But yeah, I was watching this Hotep Jesus Periscope the other day, and he started it off, and he was playing this song, and it was just like, it had this groove to it, man. It was just good. I liked it. I was enjoying the fuck out of it. And I asked him what it is, and he's like, you know, it's Lift Yourself by Kanye. So I went and listened to it on my own, you know, without him, like, you know, dancing and bebopping and shit over it. And it was a pretty fucking good song. You know, I might be liking Kanye's music. I'll let y'all know. I'll go listen to a couple of Kanye's albums and we'll see. But Kanye is not one of these people that I put a whole lot of stock into. You know, what he says, what he does, like, I remember that shit back when Hurricane Katrina happened, where Mike Myers and Kanye West got up on the news or whatever the fuck it was, and Mike Myers delivers this very milquetoast boilerplate, you know, we are so sorry about all of this happening, and our hearts are, and minds and thoughts and prayers are with all of the victims of Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, we hope that everybody is able to pull through this okay on the other side. I'm paraphrasing it best here. And then, like, it comes, he quiets down, and it comes to Kanye's turn to speak. And this nigga looks dead ass into the camera, unflinching, zero fear in his gaze, and says, George Bush doesn't care about black people. And the look that Mike Myers gave him... That is one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen on the news in my entire fucking life. I just, God, I loved that shit. Even if I don't agree that George Bush doesn't care about black people, which I don't know if George Bush does or not. I'm just like, whatever. That's Kanye's opinion. But, you know, that was when I was like, all right, so Kanye is funny to watch, but he's not somebody that I should be taking seriously. And even with this recent spate of shit that he's been talking, and I think he's right. Don't get me wrong. I think he's right. Like the whole slavery thing, that is the funniest fucking shit. Like, I was dying. Like, Hotep Jesus on Twitter, he was like, you know, Kanye said that slavery is a choice. Just wait till the Negroes get a hold of this one. And he had that gif of Steve Harvey just, like, with his hand in front of his face, just, like, pinching his mustache, just looking like, oh, shit, there's a shitstorm brewing here. I was fucking dying about that shit, man. But, yeah, no, I, like, there was, it was 400 years, and that's all of y'all. And then you look at, like, historical figures like Nat Turner and Harriet Tubman, and it's kind of hard to deny what he's saying there. Like, you know, them people kind of chose to rebel. They could have, you know, easily rose up and overthrown their slave masters. You know, it could have happened. Yeah, a lot of people would have died. Yeah, a lot of people would have got shot. But they could have done it. They could have chose that. And I'm not saying that chattel slavery is a choice, okay? I'm not saying that. You know, these people didn't really have a whole lot of choice in getting captured by the other tribes in Africa and then sold to the white people and shit like that. But there is a certain amount of choice there where they could have done something about it if they really fucking wanted to. And then if you want to look at it from the perspective of mental slavery, well, yeah, Kanye's absolutely right. The black people have a lot of advantages now that white people just don't have, like affirmative action is one. They're also at a lot of disadvantages. I'm not saying that racism doesn't exist in America or anything like that. You know, there's plenty of racism out there for everybody. But the mental prison that black people have kind of worked themselves into is a damn shame, because they could absolutely work themselves out of it, and it's not that hard. And that's part of the reason that I like the Hotep movement so much, because these guys are actively talking about getting out of this, and it's not like, you know, crypto-Islamist bullshit like with the Wu-Tang Clan. It's actually like, all right, y'all need to, you know, you need to keep your fathers around, and you need to patrol your thoughts. You need to, like, invest your money. You need to start businesses. You need to get on this hustle in a legal fashion. And it's such a great contrast to what's going on and what has gone on for decades now in the rap community, which gives black people a false ideal to look up to. You know what I mean? Not everybody can be Ice Cube. You know, not everybody can be the Wu-Tang Clan. Not everybody can be, you know, insert famous rapper here, Chance or Snoop Dogg or whoever. Not everybody can be Kanye. But these guys are like, well, you don't have to be Kanye. You don't have to be Snoop Dogg. You don't have to be Chance. Rap and basketball aren't the only ways out of the ghetto. You know, you can start a business. You can do other shit. You can get your fucking hustle on. You can get a job and work your way out of it. The Hoteps are a lot of fun. Especially because they get black people butt fucking hurt. And they get, like, the white conservatives ass-pained about them, too. It's really, really funny to watch these guys work. I absolutely love it. It's a shit show from hell, but they're preaching good stuff. Anyway, so, you know, I saw all of this stuff going on with Kanye, and it's like, all right, well, I might agree with what Kanye is saying, but that doesn't mean that I put any more stock in his opinion than I did 15 minutes ago. You know, like, why would I care what Kanye thinks? But I don't even, you know, I'm not even a fan of the guy's music. And then, like, Kanye comes out and he says all of this inflammatory bullshit that it has been, like I said, I don't care about Kanye's opinion, but watching that firestorm has been a lot of fucking fun. But what pisses me off is that all of these conservatives out here who didn't give two shits about Kanye's opinion, just like I didn't, before he started speaking all of this shit that kind of aligns with the conservative platform, now suddenly Kanye is the fucking golden child. He's the, you know, the fucking, what do you call it, the scion of black conservatism nowadays. And they might not be wrong about that, because I saw a poll from Reuters, I believe, but black male approval of Trump went up 50 fucking percent, by half, ever since Kanye came out and started talking all this good shit. And then I see a lot of conservatives that, like I say, they're treating him like the fucking golden child. And a lot of people are getting fucking taken in by Candace Owens. And I don't believe these niggas. Just, like, do you not look into these people's history? Do you not fucking keep up with them at all? Like, this is the bitch that started a doxing website. A fucking doxing service. The social autopsy. Go look up the social autopsy thing. Harmful Opinions did a lot of really good videos on it. You know, a lot of people on YouTube did really good videos exposing this website for what the fuck it was. It's a doxing website. And it's since been, you know, it's defunct. It doesn't exist anymore. But that doesn't change the fact that Candace Owens is a fucking grifter. And 2 years ago, she was talking about doxing people who had wrongthink, and now she's doing boilerplate, basic bitch conservatism. And you've got people like fucking Mike Cernovich running around talking about how she's the fucking greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm just like, God damn it, dude. You know, like, you're not stupid, okay? You're not stupid, and you've got a lot of good advice. Like, how are you this easily fucking taken in? And I'm easily taken in myself on several things. You know, I've been easily taken in before, but, like, come the fuck on, dude. Like, it's not like we don't have her fucking past out here. It's not like we don't know who the fuck she is. Anyway, so Kanye says all this shit. And then Alex Jones is like, you know, I want to get Kanye on my show for an interview. So Kanye shows up and he does the Alex Jones interview. And I haven't watched it yet. I have no fucking idea what was discussed or what anybody said on any side. And I don't particularly care. I might go and look it up for a laugh later. But point is, Kanye West appeared on InfoWars. Now, apart from that being a major boost to InfoWars numbers, I can't imagine how much their engagement went up on that episode. But apart from that, a lot of, like, mainstream conservatives like Ben Shapiro are freaking out about the fact that Kanye West went on InfoWars. It's like, nigga, you appear on CNN, the fakest of the fake news, the lyingest of the professional liars, and you're gonna get mad at Kanye for going on Alex Jones' show? Like, come the fuck on. And now there's a movement out there to get Alex Jones and Ben Shapiro into a debate. Oh my god. I would pay good money to see that fucking happen. Just good. I would cash on the barrelhead, motherfucker. What do I gotta pay to watch that fucking happen? I'll do it. But yeah, Kanye's out here doing all of this shit, and he's bringing a lot of black people around to what is traditionally seen as the conservative plank. And something that I realized, because I watched two videos, okay? I watched a video by That Guy T, who's another great YouTuber whose channel I highly recommend. I will put a link in the description to That Guy T's channel. He's, like, all over the fucking... He's about as hard to pin down as I am with the political shit. Maybe even harder, because he actively goes out and studies this shit. I just kind of let it come to me as it happens. But yeah, he did this video about how Kanye is being weaponized by the Republicans, essentially, by white conservatives, basically. And he hypothesizes that Kanye is playing some 4D chess bullshit with the eventual aim of destroying conservatism in America. And I don't think he's wrong. I don't necessarily think he's right either, but I don't think he's wrong about that. Kanye is on another level. He doesn't think like normal people do. So it's entirely possible that his end game with, you know, that is exactly what he did to the fucking fashion industry. Puts out ratty-ass clothes and then charges an exorbitant amount for them that a lot of dumb motherfuckers pay for because it's Kanye's clothing line. And it's just a big joke on the fucking fashion industry, which, you know, hey, good for Kanye. Get money. You know, get money and fucking own those fools. But, you know, why are people freaking out about Kanye one way or the other? Like, I get that it's a high-level defection. You know, he has gone off the plantation to the point where Maxine Waters has come out and said that Kanye should shut his fucking mouth because he maybe shouldn't say so much. You know, it's a high-level defection. And the amount of support among black people for Trump that happened after Kanye came out and said, you know, it's okay to support the president is pretty fucking ridiculous. But I don't fucking know. Like, why freak the fuck out about it? Why lose your goddamn mind over Kanye West? You never did before. What makes this any different? Like, so what if Kanye wants to appear on InfoWars? How is this going to hurt the cause of conservatism at all? Hey, granted, I don't think Alex Jones is a conservative. We all know that that motherfucker is putting on an act with his shit. And he delves into speculation and conspiracy theories and all of that bullshit. But at the end of the day, Alex Jones is a right-winger. He's pretty extreme right-wing. And nobody should take him seriously, in my opinion. But if he wants to interview Kanye, then fuck it. And if Kanye wants to be interviewed by him, fuck it. Why does it fucking matter? And on top of all of this Kanye bullshit, you know, there was also the thing that Hotep Jesus said. And this is what really kind of brought me around. Well, there was another thing that he was talking about, but it's not important to this conversation. But anyway, he was talking about how white Republicans are basically weaponizing Kanye West to lure black people away from the Democrat plantation, which is a plantation they should absolutely leave, in my opinion. But they're luring black people away via Kanye from the Democrat plantation to the conservative plantation. They want the black people to think and act and vote conservative. And that kind of, like, broke it down for me. Really, really clearly. Just, they don't want black people to free think. There's a scene that guy T brings up in his video. And that guy T isn't a Hotep, I don't think. He's kind of his own animal. But he's talking about Candace Owens. And there's an interview that she gave after this Kanye thing popped off because Kanye dropped her name. And the people in the interview, you know, she was talking all of this good shit about how Kanye is a free thinker. And that's, you know, important to preserve. And it's important to allow black people to formulate their own opinions and political thought and, you know, philosophies and things like that. And then one of the interviewers brings up that Kanye said that shit back in, what was it, 2009? The whole George Bush doesn't care about black people thing. And suddenly, that's not a part of Kanye's free thought. That's a position that he held in the past that he has evolved from, despite the fact that he has never once, to my knowledge, repudiated that statement. So for all we know, he still thinks George Bush is a racist. But Candace Owens, in her quest for conservative thought brownie points, has to toe the fucking line and try to bring people over to the conservative side, black people specifically, over to the conservative side of things. And it's just this big fucking mind game. And the thing that really bugs me about all of this at the base is that conservatives offer up the most milquetoast resistance, the most basic bitch resistance to progressives and progressives within their own movement. For example, Kurt Schlichter is somebody that I really enjoy following on Twitter. The guy is just an absolute cannon. He doesn't hold back. He's far, far beyond done with all of this bullshit. And I love watching the guy work. So he put out this tweet talking about how he was glad that Trump had used Stormy Daniels like a teenager uses a handful of dirty Kleenex. And he got a lot of pushback on that tweet. Basically, with people talking about, oh, you disrespect women like this. And it was the standard. It was from people claiming to be conservative, but pushing the standard liberal, you know, bullshit, progressive bullshit about how, you know, oh, this is an attack on women and you don't respect women. And well, maybe it's possible that he just doesn't respect Stormy Daniels. What has Stormy Daniels done to deserve respect? She's gone out there and lied for the DNC. You know, she's gone out there and so far as I know, pushed the Trump-Russia narrative. She's tried to get him involved in a fucking sex scandal and ruin his marriage. Why would you defend this woman from anything, literally anything? And to see all of these conservatives coming out and be like, oh, you're hulking so mean and you're being such a bad boy. And how dare you hold these opinions and be so honest about them when this isn't part of conservatism? And he's just sitting back here like, you know, fuck you. Fuck you. You don't get to tell me whether or not I'm a conservative. You don't get to tell me what principles or what positions or what opinions I'm allowed to hold as a conservative. This fuck your moral posturing bullshit. And that's a lot of what conservatism boils down to is moral posturing bullshit. They just want to feel better. They want to feel like they are doing something. They want to feel principled. They want to feel that they are conserving something when in reality they're conserving nothing. When in reality, they're letting the left, the progressive left, get away with whatever the fuck they want. And just saying, well, we can't use their tactics to attack them or fight back because then we wouldn't have the moral high ground. Fuck your moral high ground, dude. Do you want to win or don't you? Do you want to stop these people or fucking don't you? Because if you want to stop these people, which you should, then you have to get rid of this stupid moral posturing bullshit. Did you people learn nothing from Trump? You know, that grab her by the pussy tape? That would have ruined Mitt Romney. That would have ruined John McCain. That would have ruined George W. Bush. Any conservative that had a come out, you know, against, that they had a drop that on, would have fucking ruined his fucking campaign. What did Trump do? He came out, whatever. That's in the past. I didn't actually do anything. You can't tag me with anything legally. Fuck you. Yeah, they let you do it. He stuck to his guns and he had zero moral posturing about it and he got elected fucking president. And yet you've got all of these fucking people, like Ben Shapiro and that dumb thought that was trying to tell Kurt Schlichter what a fucking conservative actually is, talking about how this is not the moral position to take and we should not act like this because conservatism has principles and we're supposed to be the better man in the fight. It's like, well, no. Look, the liberals and the progressives have been winning this fight for a century or more. Because they're willing to engage in these tactics. They already brought the heat. They already escalated it to that level. Now, do you want to win? Or do you want to quietly fade into oblivion, knowing in your heart that you are morally correct and you did everything you possibly could while still maintaining your position on the right side of history? It's bullshit. It's total bullshit. And I'm pretty done with conservatism. That doesn't mean that I've dropped the general things that conservatism purports to fight for, by no stretch of the imagination. I'm still very right wing. But so far as like acting nice, no, fuck that. These people don't deserve to be acted nice towards anymore. You know, when you have everybody on the left propping up these Parkland students, and they get onto a fucking microphone and they say, if you give us that inch, that bump stock ban, we will take that mile. The time for being nice is over. It is absolutely over. When I see conservatives, quote unquote, criticizing people who are criticizing David Hogg for his willing propagation of the abrogation of your Second Amendment rights and mine, and they're like, you can't be mean to him. He's just a kid. Fuck you. Fuck you. He stepped out here, he knew what the fuck he was getting into, and he's being paid really fucking well for it. I'll guarantee it. No, the time for being nice has long since fucking passed. Long since fucking passed. It passed about a century ago. But conservatives never want to be the mean guy. They never want to be the bad guy, because they're constantly being back-footed by fucking liberals who portray them as these evil, racist fucking monsters. The time has come to just stop putting up with this bullshit. No, we're not the bad guys. As a matter of fact, we are the good guys, and we're going to advance our goals regardless of what you fucking think. Regardless of what you call us. It doesn't matter anymore. Your insults mean shit nowadays. So yeah, I'm at this point, I'm basically just done with the modern conservative movement. I had to take a short break there, so I don't remember precisely where I was when I left off. But yeah. I'm sick of these motherfuckers posturing. I'm sick of these people pretending that they're doing something, when in reality all they're doing is bending over backwards for the left. And what's weird is that I watch, like I said earlier, I watch Hard Bastards, Hard News Network live streams just about every day. Just about. You know, sometimes I gotta cut one in half or whatever. Pick it up the next morning when I get my coffee. But I try to catch them so I can stay up with what's going on. And I see people on these shows like Cenk Uygur from The Young Turks and Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire and David Pakman. Specifically Cenk Uygur in this instance, I think. But I see them talking about how the Democrats are playing too nice and how the Democrats need to hit people harder and shit like that. And I'm like, dude, are you watching the same, like, political field that I am? Like, I know we have a different view on this. We're watching it from two different sides of the bleachers, but are you watching the same thing that I am? Because I see a lot of Democrats just relentlessly smashing, talking shit like the guy earlier, ban assault weapons and shit like that, coming out and fucking saying it, and attacking Donald Trump as a fascist and a Nazi, a misogynist and abuser of women, and a misogynist and abuser of women, and a racist, and just trying to tar him with every single bad thing that they possibly can. You know, I see this from Democratic congressmen. I see this from representatives. I see it from the news. Just about every single news outlet other than, you know, the Daily Wire, InfoWars, The Blaze, The Federalist, places like that. And what do I see from the right? You know, we all know about Facebook. We all know about Facebook and its censorship of the right wing. So I think that you guys should support Breitbart, so I'm going to put a link to the actual article down in the description, but I will also include an archive for those who don't feel like supporting Breitbart, because I'm a fucking nice guy like that. But this is a very interesting article by Alan Bakari from Breitbart Tech, I believe. Heritage Foundation defends Facebook's quote-unquote right to censor, will oppose regulation. This is a perfect example of what I was talking about. A perfect fucking example. So this was published, yesterday now, on the 3rd of May. The Heritage Foundation will defend Facebook's legal right as a private company to censor content and will oppose attempts to regulate the tech giant, according to the think tank senior research fellow for technology, Clon Kitchen. I'm not going to pick on the guy's name. In an interview with Breitbart News, Kitchen argued that as a private company, Facebook has the right to censor content at will, although he strongly cautioned the social network against censorious approach. This is why we lose. This is why we lose every single time. This is why the right is losing the information war against all of these tech giants and social media companies and companies like GoDaddy, who just took altright.com down apparently today and took down the Daily Stormer. Now, I don't visit altright.com. I don't visit the Daily Stormer. I think that the Daily Stormer is a fucking joke, and it always has been and it always will be. Altright.com, I don't know jack shit about. I just know that they and the Daily Stormer should not have been censored. This is why we fucking lose. Because we're not... Well, these people are absolutely willing to use the letter of the law and the enforcement of the law and your weak, basic bitch fucking opinions and positions to censor you, but you're not willing to attempt to force them to stop. Now, I know, I'm a pretty libertarian motherfucker, small L, you know, not one of those libertarians, but, you know, I was never a fan of Gary Al Lepo Johnson, but I'm not usually in favor of giving the government the power to regulate business or pretty much anything else, because once you give the government a certain amount of power, it never gives it back except at the point of a gun. So usually I'm not in favor of shit like this, but in the case of Facebook, they're the biggest fucking platform, you know, one of the biggest websites on the internet. Same with YouTube and Twitter. Everybody uses these websites. And if they're allowed to censor your content, like I have been censored on Twitter, at least, and on Tumblr, but Tumblr matters less. If you're willing to allow them to do this shit to you, and you're not willing to hop on the bandwagon and support websites like Gab and Minds that are out here for free speech and that are attempting to give conservatives a place to speak where they will be able to interact with liberals on common ground. If you're not willing to do any of that, if you're not willing to get behind the companies that are actively trying to correct this, then fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you and your moral posturing. If the Heritage Foundation doesn't have a Gab account, I have Gab open, by the way. Let's see if I can find them on Gab. Nope, nothing. Heritage Foundation doesn't have a fucking, I see somebody sharing the same article that I'm reading right now. Also, y'all need to stop with the QAnon bullshit. Okay? The QAnon thing is horse shit. It was from the beginning. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a psyop, but I think that it's absolutely a plot, a bullshit chaff grenade to keep the poll board, the politically incorrect board on 4chan, busy with random stupid bullshit instead of actually getting work done. Y'all need to stop paying attention to the QAnon thing. It's retarded. It's right-wing wish casting, and it's a fucking distraction. Go do real shit. Fuck this QAnon horse shit. But if these companies, or are these think tanks like Heritage and Kitchen and people like that, aren't going to get on board with websites like Gab, where they're openly not censoring people, and make that a huge platform of their website's terms of service and operation, then fuck you. You know, you can either support the companies that are trying to correct the situation, or you can get the fucking government involved to stop Facebook from censoring you. But this basic bitch bullshit is why conservatives are fucking losing. Because you see the amount of market share, and you see the amount of power that a company like Facebook has, and you see that they are wielding it for bad ends, and this is unfucking questionable at this point. We know it is happening. Okay? We know it is happening. And you are unwilling to attempt to get in their way and stop them? Then what fucking good are you? What fucking good are you? I think Facebook is a private company, said Kitchen. He's not wrong about that. A former national security advisor to Senator Ben Sasse, Republican. Facebook can ultimately make decisions about what kind of speech it wants to have on its platform. Yeah. Yeah, they can. But then they have to declare that they're fucking doing it. And this smoke grenade, this smoke screen of, you know, we're a neutral platform and we're just removing shit that we think is harmful to the community and doesn't contribute to the conversation, and we're going to quietly shunt all of the conservative shit to the side so that nobody ever fucking sees it, even if they have liked the page. They are lying to you. And you're not willing to do anything about it. You know they are lying, and you're not willing to do anything about it, to try and do anything about it, to force them to stop this censorship, when you know how fucking important the midterm elections are, and you know how fucking important the 2020 election is going to be. This is this basic bitch conservative movement bullshit that I'm fucking done with. I think it is better for consumers and the American people to have as free a space for open dialogue and diversity of viewpoints as possible, but they're a private company, and the Heritage Foundation is going to be very clear about a private company's right to organize and conduct its business as it sees fit. This isn't fucking about a private company anymore, dude. This is about controlling the public narrative. Everybody is on Facebook but, like, me and 15 other people who realize how bullshit that website is. Everybody is on Facebook. And if nobody on Facebook is allowed to see conservative opinions, if they just get censored outright or reported as spam or hate speech because of their new fiddly shit that they're doing with the hate speech button, then what the fuck do you think people are going to be exposed to? Alum makes a very good point later on in this article. Actually, it's right here. Kitchen disagreed with the view that platforms like Facebook and Google are special cases due to their dominant position in the marketplace and their unprecedented influence over news and politics, which includes the power to sway undecided voters by up to 80% and boost voter registration by significant margins among targeted users. And you're willing to just, I guess
if you want to censor us, that's okay.
Fucking bitch. Use a bitch-made nigga. Fucking Kitchen. Heritage Foundation, y'all some bitch-made niggas up there. No fucking sack in ya. In the entire fucking organization. Fuck the Heritage Foundation. Bitch-made motherfuckers. Not a speck of worth in the goddamn organization. Fuck Heritage. You don't understand how dangerous it is to have a company that can sway undecided voters by up to 80% censoring your entire fucking side of the conversation? And you don't think that we maybe in this one instance should use the government to correct it? You don't think it's just perfectly fine? Fucking done with these bitch assholes. I think it's clear that they challenge traditional understandings of all those things, but I don't think it rises to the level of government regulating how they conduct their business or constraining them in other ways. Why the fuck not? We had an entire period of history that I remember learning about when I was in middle school, about, like, the whole antitrust thing and trust-busting laws, and I want to say it was Roosevelt that did that shit. You know, we had an entire period in our history about getting rid of these gigantic companies that had such a huge control over the market that they were effective monopolies, if not actual monopolies. And that's what Facebook and fucking Google are. Google is so powerful that the name of that company has been translated into common parlance, it has taken on the meaning of go look it up, just Google it. That's an unprecedented level of power and influence that one company has over the entirety of America. This isn't like, you know, I need a Q-tip. Okay? You know, I need a Q-tip. That means that you need a cotton swab. It's perfectly fine for Kleenex to be the go-to phrase for, you know, tissues. Google literally controls access to information to the point where their search engine is the most popular search engine on the fucking internet. And it's okay for them to censor? Dude, fucking worthless. Absolutely fucking worthless. I think right now we have free speech on these platforms, said Kitchen. I want to bully this guy. I want to beat him up. I want to take his lunch money. He's such a basic bitch. We have free speech. We have free speech on these fucking platforms. Nigger, are you serious? Are you fucking serious? We have free speech on these platforms? Oh my God. Like the amount of people just getting banned off of Twitter. The amount of verified censorship going on Facebook, and there's free speech on that platform? Fucking, okay, fine. We're done with your ass. Fucking die with your principles. We're gonna go out there and actually do shit. You can have your fucking clear conscience. We'll go get the actual work done for you, you stupid faggot. Just about any political view that you want to have, you can get on these platforms. False. False. You can't. Now, as much as I dislike the Daily Stormer, as much as I still maintain that they are the absolute ass end of the internet, well, apart from Tumblr. Tumblr is worse than the Daily Stormer. But as much as a joke as the Daily Stormer is, they don't even have a fucking website anymore. They admitted, they just woke up that morning and decided that the Daily Stormer shouldn't be allowed on the internet anymore. And we have fucking free speech on these platforms? You absolute cuck. You fucking cuck. Heritage Foundation is fucking worthless. They certainly have community standards. Yeah, that doesn't include right-wing speech. God help you. God help you on YouTube if you fucking question the Parkland narrative. If you throw doubt upon the golden children. God fucking help you. Kitchen praised Facebook for its receptiveness to conservative outreach. Yeah, because, like, you come to them and you beg on your fucking knees like an absolute serf. Like a puss little bitch. You beg on your fucking knees for Facebook to please let you have a fucking voice. And when they allow your milquetoast-ass brand of conservatism a platform, you maintain that we have freedom of speech when you're out here doing absolute jack shit to protect that freedom. In the face of the verified censorship, you do nothing. So long as the Heritage Foundation's Facebook page stays up, you don't give a fuck. Because you're not interested in conserving anything. You're just interested in making money. You're just interested in what you can get out of it. You don't care about society or civilization or any fucking thing. You just care about your bottom fucking line. And as long as your bottom line stays intact, you're going to defend Facebook because they allow you to exist on their platform. You fucking whore. That doesn't mean we agree with everything or that there's been total transparency or decisive answers on all of our questions. This Senator Kyle, I'm assuming it's Kyle. It's spelled K-Y-L, so I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing dude's name. This Senator Kyle audit, I'm not sure why audit is in brackets there, is a recognition that there are some unanswered questions. But in terms of their response to us and their professionalism, they've been nothing but top-notch. So as long as they give you a fucking... So as long as they allow you to lick their cock, you're fine with it. You're fine with it. As long as they say, you know, you're going to have to lick our dick. And we'll allow you to remain on our platform if you lick our dick just right. You're fine with it. You're fine with being a fucking dick-licking coward. Today, Axios reported that the Heritage Foundation was involved in Facebook's political bias review, conducted using employees of Eric Holder's law firm. Oh, God. Oh, God. Led by former Republican Senate Whip John Kyle. I guess I'm gonna pronounce it Kyle. Kitchen said the report was a misstatement and that Heritage has set up off-the-record meetings between conservative tech policy experts and Facebook under its own initiative without being prompted by the social network. Yeah, because if you don't do anything, if you don't force them to fucking react, if you don't bend their arm behind their back to the point of breaking, they're going to do whatever the fuck they want to you, and you're going to sit there and eat shit with a smile, like a fucking bitch, like the absolute bitch-made nigga that you fucking are. Sorry, I don't mean to get so heated about this, but this pisses me off, and this is why, this was like straw that broke the camel's back. I'm fucking done with the conservative movement. Fuck these people. Fuck these absolute cowards. You know, I may not know what the exact right decision is to make here. I don't know what the exact right policy is to do here. I'm not that intelligent. But I know that lying down and fucking taking it in the ass like this is not the way forward. Kitchen indicated that the Heritage Foundation will adopt a wait-and-see approach regarding Facebook's stated commitment to address censorship on the platform, saying it remains to be seen if Facebook is serious about the matter. So yeah, instead of holding their feet to the fire, you're just going to wait until they come after your ass, and then you're going to get up in arms about it, because now you're the one who's being affected by it. You know, Altright.com gets shut down, who cares? The Daily Stormer gets shut down, who cares? InfoWars gets shut down, who cares? The Federalist gets shut down, who cares? You know, the Daily Wire gets shut down, who cares? The Blaze gets shut down, who fucking cares? Random conservative YouTubers get shut down, who fucking cares? But when they come after your ass, suddenly it's a fucking problem. But until then, we need to wait and see. You absolute fucking cunt rag. I hope they're serious, said Kitchen. They've given every indication that they are. How this audit goes forward, what the findings are, and what their response to the findings are will determine if they're serious. Yeah, just sit there and wait and see until you feel that dick poking up against your rectum. In addition to censorship, Kitchen agreed that Facebook's changes to its newsfeed algorithm and its plan to rank news sources by trustworthiness are areas of concern. Areas of concern. They're not something that you should be fucking worried about. They're not something that you should actively try to stop. They're areas of concern. Fucking little bitch. The shift to the algorithm is a political black box, said Kitchen. I don't think people understand it. Some popular websites and news sources and aggregators on both sides of the aisle have expressed concern about the impact of that algorithm change. Yeah! Yeah, they fucking have! Because the anti-war left is being censored too! You know, God forbid anybody be excited about fucking peace in Korea! God forbid anybody not want to go to fucking war with Syria in a fucking proxy war for Israel! God fucking forbid, right? This affects not just the right in general, but it also affects the left that's not the extreme fucking anarcho-communist left, or the communist left in general. Everybody is affected by this, but your ass is going to sit there and pretend that everything's okay until you feel that dick in your backside. Heritage would want to know more about how the algorithm works and why the effects of the algorithm are what they are. Yeah, because, you know, once they finally censor all of us, then we'll know what's up. Stupid fucking... We haven't asked them to directly explain the algorithm yet. Why the fuck not? What the fuck are you doing? Why the fuck not? We're going to wait and see how this audit comes out. So you're going to sit there with your thumb up your ass until a dick replaces it. Got it. I understand. Kitchen supports the idea of social networks maintaining lists of banned posts and users to be reviewed by conservative third parties. Oh, so yeah, it's okay if they ban them until your party... Or somebody allied with you says, this person shouldn't be there, they shouldn't be on this banned list, and then maybe if Facebook is feeling generous, after nutting on your fucking face, they'll unban these people that you happen to like. Coward. A variant of this idea has been proposed by Trump campaign manager Brad Parscale. I'm very happy for that to be one of the many considerations. They do need to do a better job of explaining to users why they're making the decisions they're making. I think they understand that. What's left to be seen is how well they're going to go about doing that. Despite these suggestions for improvement on Facebook's part, Kitchen praised the social media, the social network for its granular and technical approach to enforcing hate speech rules on American users. Okay, here you go. This is all that you fucking need to know about the Heritage Foundation right here, okay? Kitchen praised the social network for its granular and technical approach to enforcing hate speech rules on American users. This motherfucker is in favor of hate speech regulation. He's just a corporate dick licker. That's all that the Heritage Foundation is fucking good for. Fuck these people. One of the points that the company made, which bears at least consideration, is that they've gone so granular. They've tried to be so technical as an act of preventing or mitigating bias, taking as much of the subjectivity out of it and injecting a logical rationale for individual choices on the removal of content. Yeah, their logical rationale is if it's right wing, it's gotta go, eventually. So it starts off with the Daily Stormer and alt-right, and then it eventually gets into Alex Jones, and then it gets into Ben Shapiro and fucking the Daily Wire, and then it gets into the Federalist, and then it gets into Blaze, and then it gets into the Heritage Foundation, because your dick-licking just wasn't quite good enough for their taste. They've gotten used to your technique, and now they're coming for your fucking stupid ass. Kitchen declined to take a position on whether it's good or bad for Facebook to impose European-style hate speech norms on American citizens, but he said it is ultimately Facebook's decision to make. Declined to take a position. I just want to repeat this. I want to repeat this sentence, okay? So listen the fuck up. If any of you have any doubts about how useless the Heritage Foundation fucking is, just listen to this again. Kitchen declined to take a position on whether it's good or bad for Facebook to impose European-style hate speech norms on American citizens, but he said it is ultimately Facebook's decision to make. Just let that sink into your fucking head meat, fam. The motherfucker didn't come out and say that, yeah, Facebook censoring right-wing opinions is bad. How fucking easy is that? You're not even getting into controversial political opinions on the right-hand side of the aisle. How fucking hard is it to come out and say, no, Facebook should not be censoring right-wing opinions? This is a bad thing that they are doing, and we do not want them to do it anymore. How fucking hard is that? Heritage Foundation is worthless. They're a bunch of fucking dick lickers. That's all that they are. And Kitchen needs to shut his fucking cock holster and go back to the fucking obscurity that he fucking came from. If you're not going to get out here and defend our rights as quote-unquote conservatives to speak our minds on the largest platforms in the world, then what fucking good are you? Why should anybody ever take your stupid ass seriously ever again? What in the fuck is wrong with you? So yeah, conservative movement, fucking done with that shit. The Heritage Foundation gets propped up by conservatives all the fucking time as this bastion, this think tank, this great ally that it's such a good thing that we have the Heritage Foundation on our side. What the fuck? When the chips are down and shit is going bad, shit is going south fast on Facebook and Twitter and websites like them. And what does the Heritage Foundation do? Well, we're going to sit here and we're not going to say anything inflammatory and we're not going to speak out against it. And we're going to continue to lick Zuckerberg's dick and hope to God that he gives us just one more day on his platform. Even if he's censoring all of our posts and people who like our page can't see it. And we just want to be here. So please, Mr. Zuckerberg, don't hit us too hard. You fucking cowards. You worthless pieces of shit. Done. Walking the fuck away. Fuck these people. If I don't have a political party and I don't have an ideology, then I'm perfectly willing to be out here as a fucking nomad. Just no party, no people, just me. Fuck all of you. The conservatives don't want to conserve shit, and the liberals want to fucking take my rights away and make me a fucking servant, a fucking subject in my own goddamn country. I don't fucking think so. And if these motherfuckers aren't going to stand up and do what's right in this situation and protect our right to free speech on these platforms that have such a wide reach as to be considered functional monopolies, if not actual monopolies, then what the fuck good are you? Why should I ally myself with you? You're willing to let the progressives get away with whatever the fuck they want until they come after you personally. You won't stand up for Alex Jones. You won't stand up for Andrew Anglin. You know, you won't stand up for altright.com, whoever the fuck's running that website. I don't know. But you won't stand up for these people. But you'll stand up for Facebook's right to censor you. I don't have any fucking more patience for this bullshit. I do not have any more fucking patience for this. These people need to go. They need to go. They need to get out of the fucking conservative movement. Shit or get off the pot, bitch. Shit or get off the pot. These people are worthless. I don't know why anybody fucking puts up with them. But yes, there will be links to all of the articles down in the description. I'm done with the podcast at this point. I've been going on for God only knows how fucking long at this point. Yeah, just... I'm done. I'm done with these weak, fucking cowardly, bitch-made niggas. I'm done. Done. I wash my hands of the Heritage Foundation and anybody associated with them. They are worthless. They're not going to protect your rights. They're not going to protect my rights. They're going to sit there and wait until they are personally affected by this. And then they're going to come out with, please don't hit us anymore. Please allow us a small little platform on your gigantic social media network that just about everybody in the fucking country uses. Please, daddy, don't hit me anymore. Fucking bitch. Pisses me off so goddamn badly. We don't need people like this. We don't need people like this. We do not need their help, because their help is worth about as much as the guy who stands up in the bar when you're sitting there drinking with your buddies, you know, and you're talking, and it's like you're trading fight stories, and it's like, man, if I'd have been there, that motherfucker wouldn't have got shit on you. And then you actually get into a fight with some belligerent piece of shit in the bar, and you look around for your friend to come out of left field and glass this motherfucker in the back of the head with a beer bottle, and he's bugged out the fucking front door. That's the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation is that motherfucker who is bugged out the front door because he didn't want to help you when it fucking counted. But he talks all that good shit. He talks all that good shit when it's not hard to be a patriot. He talks all that good shit when it's not hard to puff yourself up as a defender of your friends and a defender of your rights and shit like that. They talk all that good shit, but when the fucking nose meets the grindstone, when the rubber hits the road, these motherfuckers bitch out like the cowardly faggots that they fucking are. But I guess being a political nomad isn't quite so bad. I get to make fun of everybody. That's a bonus. I also get demonized by everybody too, but that's nothing fucking new. But yeah, if any of you guys out there are supporting the Heritage Foundation in any way, I would advise you to just cut that shit off. Just leave them motherfuckers in the dust. Let them wither on the vine like they fucking deserve. Fuck the Heritage Foundation. So alright, let's do the last round of sponsors, and then I'll get out of y'all's fucking hair, because God knows it's been like fucking 3 hours now. Alright, so next up in the sponsor role is Aaron Clary, our good friend Captain Capitalism himself. So Aaron Clary is a former economist and banker who blogs at captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. He also has a YouTube channel, as well as being active on several social media websites, including Twitter and Gab, and that's AaronClary. Aaron Clary. He also runs a consulting business at assholeconsulting.com. And no, I'm not making that up. That's the name of the website, assholeconsulting.com. So if you have any questions about life, the universe, and everything, barring legal or medical advice, I guess, he will give you the absolute straight fucking dope about how you can either unfuck your life or prevent yourself from fucking your life up. So if you've got questions like, should I date this girl? Should I go to college? What should I major in college? Should I go here and take this job? Should I move here? Should I do this? Should I do that? Then Aaron will be able to help you out. And you will have only yourself to blame when you don't take his advice and wind up in a fucked up situation. He also has several books out, a few of which I have done the audiobooks for. So the most recent one that I did was Poor Richard's Retirement, which is a treatise, it's about 145 pages, on how it is feasibly possible to achieve retirement in today's economic environment for far less than people are telling you that you need. It involves minimalism, but there's some intricacies in there that you will want to pick up the book to actually get a handle on, and if you want to hear my dulcet tones reading you this incredibly important book, then you can go and pick it up. It's in Kindle, paperback, and Audible. Audio, but Audible is where you're going to get it from. I've also done Enjoy the Decline, Accepting and Living with the Death of the United States, so if you're worried about the way that the country is going, then you want to pick this book up so that it can help you adjust your mindset, realize what you are able to control and what you're not able to control. Take control of what you are able to affect in your life and not worry about the big shit, because the big shit is stuff that you really can't affect anyway. There's also some helpful tips on gaming the system in there. Just wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. Very good book. I enjoyed it. I've read it like, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, including when I did the audiobook for it. And it never gets old. It's a very, very good book. It's probably my favorite book that Aaron has written, and I highly recommend it. So I also did Reconnaissance Man, which is about how you shouldn't immediately jump out of high school and get into college. You should take a few years to build up a little nest egg and figure out what you want to do with your life and where you want to do it. Where's the most advantageous position, place in the United States to set up a business, and then go out there and do your shit, fam. So pick this book up. It'll help you get shit straight when you're younger. It's more for the younger set, but older people who have wasted their lives in, you know, dead-end corporate jobs can absolutely get some benefit out of this, too. He also has Curse of the High IQ, which is a book about how having a high IQ isn't necessarily a good thing. It might be correlated with higher problems in life, like depression, alcoholism, things like that. So if you've got problems in your life like that, and you're not a dummy, and you're wondering why the world is seemingly built for normies, and why people still use checks in this day and age, and why people drive so slow on the interstate, then this is the book that you want to pick up. It will explain all of that to you and deliver some nice solutions there at the very end. Now, it's just a hypothesis. He doesn't have any actual data. He just has this this hypothesis, and it's not an actual theory. He doesn't have any actual data to back this up, but he has done a little bit of research into it, and he has done a little bit of independent experimentation with his friends collecting data, and it seems to be a fairly strong correlation from what I've been able to gather. So, yeah, go pick that book up. It's a really fucking good one. Next, we have John E. Boyle. John is an author who has written the excellent novel Queen's Heir. That is H-E-I-R, the heir to the queen, not the air that the queen breathes. It is a sword and sorcery fantasy story set among the Hittites at the end of the Bronze Age, and it's got everything that you would look for in a sword and sorcery novel, including but not limited to swords, sorcery, sword fights, demons, armies, mass combat, conflagracious firestorms, ghosts, werewolves. I think there's even a vampire in there at a certain point. High seas adventures. And urban adventures as well. It's a really, really fucking good book. It's even got a really sweet romance subplot. Like, I really like the romance subplot in this, but I can't wait for the next book. And I'm not just saying that because I'm doing the audiobook for this, which I have issues with what I have recorded already, so I'm going to have to go and fix that. But it's coming along. Yeah, it's just a really good book, and you can go and find that on the right-hand side of my blog. Just go to the front page and scroll down. You'll see a link to it to Amazon. It is an affiliate link, but I highly recommend that you go and pick up this book. You will not fucking regret it, fam. Speaking of affiliate accounts, we have the affiliate accounts. So I have one for Amazon, so if you're going to do any shopping on Amazon, then I would appreciate it if you go to my blog first, jimfear138.blogspot.com. Click on the Amazon link on the left-hand side of the page. It will take you to the website, and you will be able to buy whatever you want, and it doesn't cost you anymore, it doesn't cost the seller anymore, but Amazon gives me a kickback for sending you over there to buy shit. I'm about to have to go over there and buy me a set of nose hair trimmers like good old Captain Clary was talking about. Because I don't know what it is, man. I turned 30 and my nose hairs just started bothering me. So I got to go get me a set of trimmers to take care of this shit. And I would advise you to go ahead and buy yours so you're not trapped in a situation like me where the day you fucking turn 30, you just got all of these itchy nose hairs going on in your face hole that you don't know how to deal with. It's annoying as fuck. I'm not going to lie. I've been joking around about it, but no, seriously, the nose hairs are annoying as fuck, and I'm about to go use Aaron's affiliate account to buy my nose hairs trimmers, as he puts it. So yeah, we have mycomicshop.com, which is your one-stop shop for all things comic books. So if you are looking for DC, Marvel, or indie companies like Alterna, or Boom, or Top Cow, or Kung Fu Comics, or, you know, other companies like that, they've got everything. And if they don't have it, they have a listing for it so that you can put it on your wish list and they will email you when it becomes available. I have found all kinds of random, stupid, obscure bullshit on this website, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. This is where I got my Cadillacs and Dinosaurs comic books, my Dinosaurs for Hire. I got some of my Hellboy comics from here. I got my Spawn comics from here. Just like all kinds of shit. They got new and used. So, if you're looking for getting your Marvel fix, and you don't want to actually give Marvel money, this is the place where you need to go, fam. Next, we have Right Stuff Anime. So, if you're interested in anime, manga, light novels, what the fuck else do they have? T-shirts, hats, jackets, body pillows, porn. They have porn. They also have, like, the Gundam figurines and the Nendoroid figurines and shit like that. I highly recommend this website. I've never had a bad experience with them. They always show up. Well, there was that one time with the Konosuba light novels where it took a little bit for it to arrive. But I think that was more on the side of the publisher rather than Write Stuff Anime. I think they were backed up a little bit and they had to wait to get the stock in so that they could send it out. But yeah, I've never had a bad experience with Write Stuff Anime. I'm looking at the Berserk manga volumes right now because I've really... really want to read Berserk for some reason. I don't know why. Usually I'm not into long-running mangas that haven't completed themselves yet. Berserk's been going on for like fucking 30 years now, and it's still not done. But for some reason, I really, really fucking want to read Berserk right now. So I'm looking at picking up like the first couple of volumes of that manga. We'll see how that goes. But I highly recommend the website. Never had a bad experience with them. They're good people. Next, we have ads on the blog. So if you want to advertise on the website, then all you need to do is get in touch with me via the contact form on the left-hand side of the blog. And for $20 a month, you will get not only a post on the blog directing people to go and buy your thing, you will get an ad right at the top of the blog. So that's one of the first things that people see when they come down, linking them to whatever it is, be it a book or a seminar series or whatever you happen to be selling. You will also get advertisements on my social media accounts. So that's the Twitter, the Tumblr, the Minds, the Gab, the Steemit, various other websites. I also have YouTube and a BitChute, and I think I still have a Vimeo and a Daily Motion. But I will make a video for people, and I will do audio stuff, put it up on my podcast link, where this audio goes out, so that people will hear about it. And there's no obligation, so if the first month doesn't work out for you, then, you know, you don't have to continue if you don't want to. We'll see if we can get you at least $20 in sales, and then you can decide where you want to go from there. You will also get a spot in the podcast sponsor role like I'm doing right now, right up at the top, so it's one of the first advertisements that people hear about. So if that sounds like something that you want to get in on, give me a message, and we'll get it banged out, fam. Lastly, we have the Bandcamp. This is where I'm putting up all of my independent audio work. So watch that space. There is more stuff coming in the future. I've just been backed up with work and writing and, you know, audiobooks and all of this stuff. So more stuff is coming. But if you want to hear how I sound independent of Dimension Bucket Media, then that's where you want to go. There's a couple of stories up there now. The Haunter of the Ring by Robert E. Howard and The Judge's House by Bram Stoker, as well as some older narrations from, like, 2014, where the audio quality is kind of garbage, but it's there if you fucking want it. And they're all up there for cheap. I don't think I've charged over $2 for a single album, quote-unquote. But yeah, that's it. All right. Thanks, everybody. Go and check out the sponsors. And thank you very much for listening. I will catch y'all next week, all things being easy and conducive to that eventuality. I love you guys. Peace out, everybody.